right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. All right. It's Wednesday. That means it's Wild Card Wednesday. You're being Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in now. It's any artist, any song, anything. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, author Greg Borzo is going to join us. He's written several books about this city. His latest is called Lost Restaurants of Chicago, and it's just about that. It's about great restaurants that no longer exist, that had a rich history and a really nice run, and we're going to reminisce about that and talk about that. And then after chatting with Greg, we're going to open up the phone lines and talk about bars and clubs that are no longer existing and businesses that are no longer in Chicago that we used to go to, and we'll be a little nostalgic this morning. We like to talk about that kind of stuff and remembering what used to be Chicago. So Lost Restaurants of Chicago is the name of the book, and Greg Borzo is going to join us. The Academy Award nominations came out. There were a few surprises and a couple of snubs. I will tell you all about the Academy Award nominations. We'll talk a little bit about that and then talk about the snubs and the surprises and what your thoughts were. We have a Blackhawks Express, another good Blackhawks Express. That's two in a row. So we've got that coming up. And as always, the phone lines are open. Text lines are open to you. 312-981-7200. Think about those lost neighborhood businesses or bars or restaurants that you remember that aren't around anymore, because that's what we're going to chat about for a while in a little bit. So 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show, and subscribe to our podcasts. If you can't listen live 1 to 5 a.m. every weekday morning, download and subscribe to our podcasts. They're free. Go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe. It's free. Every second of every show is podcast, and it will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So that's the show this morning, and that's what's coming up. Please stay tuned and have fun, and let me talk to my great producer, Dan Shugru. Hi, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How you doing?
All right, man. How about yourself?
All right. We want to thank Doc.
Yes.
One of our listeners. He's in KC, right?
Kansas City.
Doc sent us a... It was Pizza Week last week, National Pizza Week. So we spent a significant amount of time talking about pizza throughout last week. And one of the mornings that we were talking about St. Louis-style pizza. And that's where they use a cheese called Provel, which is like Swiss provolone white cheddar. And it's really gooey, everybody says, and it's really, really good. Doc sent us a few bags of that. And it was funny because it was like Ernie, our engineer, he's like, hey, a perishable box showed up for you guys. And I was like, uh-oh, what's going on there? And it was about the same size of the box in 7. I was like, is that Gwyneth Paltrow's head? Because I don't know. But anyway, no, it was a bunch of bags of Provel cheese directly from, and I hope I'm saying this right, Imo's. It's IMO apostrophe S. It's either Emo's or IMO's. And it's in St. Louis. It's the original St. Louis style pizza. That's where they serve it. It's IMO's of St. Louis, and it's also sold in stores. But he sent us a few bags of the Provel, and I actually opened one of the bags up and just started chowing down on it. It's shredded Provel, and I'm sure it probably is, you know, it'd be fantastic melted, but I just try it. It's delicious. So I just want to thank Doc. That was very kind of you, Doc. Thank you very much. We got between Dan and I, we can take a few bags of that stuff home. So from Imo's Pizza, I like their they have a great logo. There's a giant pizza chef holding a steaming pizza underneath the arch. So that's the stuff. They got a pretty basic menu, but very, very cool stuff. So again, thank you, Doc. Thank you, one, for listening, because you're a real loyal listener and we appreciate that, and two, for sending us the Provel, which is a delicious cheese. That was a nice thing to show up to at work. Very cool. Dan, make sure you bring home some cheese, right?
I will.
A little Provel. All right. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning, sir.
You like cheese?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, not enough to carry a bag home, but yeah, I like it.
All right.
That's the first doesn't the woman you love love cheese?
I mean,
cheese?
Come on.
Right? You know she does. She's from the great state of Wisconsin.
That's right.
Of course
That's
she
right.
loves cheese.
Oh, you know what, Dan? I forgot to tell you. This is like behind the scenes stuff. I forgot to tell you when the mic was off. I don't have the 115 live read.
Okay.
So I just wanted to let you know before we hit 115 and or one whatever it is, I don't have that live read. I just wanted to make. I should have told you that off the air. Very unprofessional of me.
It's all right. You were eating cheese.
Yeah, I was.
The spirit of transparency.
That's right. I was too busy eating cheese to worry about doing what was right for the show. That's good. So how you doing,
Vic?
I would
like to think it's more you were so transfixed by the cheese you had just simply forgotten.
Cheese was good. It was good. You know, when you're shoveling handfuls of shredded cheese in your mouth, you know it's got to be good. So, anyway, well, how you doing, Vic?
I'm great.
Yeah?
Yeah. All yeah, right. Yeah, I'm great. You know, we're desperate in radio. If we have food, I mean, like cheese, we'll just take handfuls and eat the cheese
all
night.
Yeah, no, exactly.
We'll eat whatever.
Yeah. You know, it's really funny working this shift because, you know, for the most part, Vic, you know this, for the most part, like, if there are food-related guests earlier during the day, they just leave the crap out for us. So it's like they figure, the overnight crew will eat it. Then it doesn't matter. It's been sitting out for 7 hours.
Right. Oh, look, we got pork rinds. That's cheesecake from noon.
That's right. It's great working the overnights. We love it. All right. Well, that's Vic. He's in the newsroom. Dan is producing, and I'm your host. And coming up right after this break, Greg Borzo, the author of Lost Restaurants of Chicago, will join us. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk, text, and Wildcard Wednesday requests. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. We are going to talk about lost businesses that we miss in Chicago because we're about to welcome my guest to the show. His name is Greg Borzo, and he is the author of several books about the city, his latest being Lost Restaurants of Chicago. So we're going to start out talking about this book and about Lost Restaurants of Chicago, and then we're going to spread out and talk about bars and clubs and businesses and places that we used to like to go to that are no longer around. So we're going to reminisce a little bit. And, of course, the Academy Award nominations were announced yesterday. We're going to talk all about that, and we'll talk about the surprises and the snubs. And get to that as well. We got a Blackhawks Express to play, too. So 312-981-7200. And let's welcome author Greg Borzo to the show. Greg, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. Let's get your background a little bit. Are you originally from Chicago?
Born in Chicago. Love the city. I studied journalism, so my training is really in journalism. And it's only in the last 10 years or so that I've branched off into books.
And you, what part of Chicago are you from?
Around the Ravenswood area.
Oh, okay. I grew up at Addison Ravenswood. I lived in the greenhouse right next to the Brown Line stop. The Addison Brown Line stop is the house I grew up in.
So you have the L in your running in your vein.
I do, and at this current point, Greg, at this current point, I live right across the street from an L station as well. So it's
wow.
It's been a part. You wrote a book about the L. I want to talk about that a little bit later on as well. What is it about that you love about this city, Greg? Because I'm born and raised here too, and this is the for me it's the best city, and I would never live anywhere else. What is it about the city that makes it so special, you think?
Well, the energy and the activity, there's so much to do, whether it's a sporting event or a book lecture or a museum exhibit or just the lakefront, now the Riverwalk. There's just so much to do. It's like a candy shop.
Yeah, it is. And the people who live here are pretty great, too. You got a big city here, but it's got the Midwestern feel to it, you know?
Yeah, friendliness, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, you started writing books. What was the first book that you wrote, and what was the impetus to do that? I mean, you were a journalist. What was the first book that you wrote?
Well, I wrote the first one was the book about the L.
Uh-huh.
And the impetus was I took the L every day to get to work and back. And I was curious about everything I saw along the way. And so I started to research a little bit, what is that? Why are they doing this? And why do we have to wait, et cetera? And so I learned more, and I figured other people might be curious also about these facts. And I looked around, and there was no book about the L. Yeah, there was one that went all the way up to 1932.
Oh.
A great book. The author never did a second volume. And so I thought there might be a market, there might be a need, an interest for such a book.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And then you went out and you did it. Well, we'll talk about some of your other books as well, but your latest is Lost Restaurants of Chicago, and you have an event. You have an event happening tomorrow, Thursday the 24th. Book launch party. It's at Harold Washington Library, and you're gonna have Doug Soane there from Hot Dogs.
Yes, Doug wrote the foreword to my book, and when I contacted him initially, he was very enthusiastic about the idea. So I decided just to do everything possible with him. He's a great guy, very interesting and very knowledgeable. So he'll be at the book launch as well, talking about his restaurant, Hot Doug's, and probably telling a few jokes, as Doug will do.
Yeah, I've had Doug on the show. I've had Doug on the show several times. He's a great guy, and I've been to Hot Dogs many times.
I bet you miss it.
I do miss it. I miss it terribly. But I used to go back when it was on Roscoe. I would go to back in that first location before he moved over to California.
The original.
Yeah. So, and the whole thing starts at 6 p.m. at the Harold Washington Library. Hot Dog, Doug Soane is going to be there. You're going to be there. And there's a free raffle with over $1,000 in prizes. That's also happening at this event tomorrow night, the book party launch.
That's right. And the raffle prizes, again, are free. They involve travel, tours, food, books, photos, etc. Eli's Cheesecakes. If you love Eli's Cheesecakes, we got a $100 gift certificate for you.
Wow! All right.
Donated by that company. So we have a variety of prizes and a good chance of winning. Better odds than you get with the lottery.
Mm. All right, that's great. Sounds great. Well, let's talk about the book, Greg. The idea for the book, Lost Restaurants of Chicago. You know, we like to reminisce here on the show. Like I said, later on, after we talk to you, I'm going to open up the phone lines and we're going to talk about bars and clubs that have closed and other businesses and things like that, because we miss a lot of these places and there's an emotional attachment to it. So what was it about the Lost Restaurants? Was there a certain thing that did a restaurant close down and you said, man, I need to write about this?
Actually, it was more just from conversing with people, just sitting around talking. It just kept coming up. People would mention a restaurant that they liked and that they missed. For example, I give tours of the L for the Chicago History Museum.
Okay.
And part of the tour is to ride around the loop, on the loop elevated. And more than half a dozen times on different tours, we would go past a restaurant called the Plymouth Rooftop Bar and Grill. And more than half a dozen times, somebody would say, oh, that restaurant used to be called Binion's, and they had the best turtle soup.
That's right.
The best turtle soup. You know, where does that come from?
Yeah.
And so things like that, little comments like that, conversation sparked my interest in Lost Restaurants.
Well, you know, I mean, we've got such a great history with food in this city and restaurants that it's obviously a great idea for a book. And I just want to mention before we jump into the book and go into the specifics of the book, my neighborhood just lost a restaurant at the beginning of the year. The great Sabatino's, the Italian restaurant on Irving Park. I live very, very near there. I was sad to see that place close down. It was great. It was old school, family run. I just thought I loved that place.
Good food and good prices. It will be sorely missed.
Yeah, no question about it.
All
right. So let's talk a little bit about the structure of the book. How did you structure it chapter wise and things like that?
Well, there's a chapter on the early days of restaurants in Chicago, back when women were not allowed in most restaurants. How restaurants got started. They were rough and tumble kind of taverns to begin with. There's a chapter on the hotel restaurants, because hotel restaurants really kicked it up a notch for Chicago. I've got a chapter on ethnic restaurants, so important to the fabric of the city.
Yeah.
Another chapter on steakhouses, because that's pretty, you know, central.
Yeah.
Beefsteak in Chicago. Soul food restaurants merited a chapter. pretty much, you know, by topic like that. And then finally a chapter on diners and delis and dogs. Yeah. So some of the not, you know, white tablecloth restaurants, but some great ones nevertheless. Not only hot dogs, but Felony Frank's.
Yeah.
Another hot dog restaurant that was employing ex-felons and putting it right front and center in their name and with all of their food offerings.
Well, we're a great hot dog town. There's no question about mm-hmm. it. We're a great, but I will say this: in looking at the materials for your book, I did not know until I was reading a part of your book that Wong Khao closed down. I didn't know that, and that was my go-to restaurant in China. I haven't been there in a few years, but that was my go-to restaurant. Anytime we would go to Chinatown, that's where we'd go. Tell us about that restaurant.
Well, that was the longest running Chinese-American restaurant in Chicago, and it closed in 2017, and they just ran out of steam. Often one generation will take over for another and then another, but eventually no one in the family, no one in the business wanted to keep that going. It's a lot of work to run a restaurant. You're talking some really long hours.
Yeah.
And so we were sorry to see that one close. Mm-hmm. Now you have to go up to, I believe it's on Irving Park, Orange Garden
yeah.
is now the longest running Chinese restaurant in Chicago now that Wong Khao is closed.
I grew up at Irving and Ravenswood. That was our go-to mm-hmm. That was our go-to Chinese restaurant, Orange Garden. It's still there. The facade looks exactly the same. The inside of the restaurant looks exactly the same. It has the same feel that it did when we would go there like 40 years ago.
Yes. But some people, not you, but others might take it for granted, and all of a sudden there'll be a close sign. So my thought in all of this is patronize today's restaurants so that they're not lost restaurants tomorrow.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good
idea. You could say eat out early and often, the Chicago way.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Greg, I want to talk about more of the lost restaurants of Chicago, and I know that you probably have some really interesting stories about why some of these places closed and how long they operated mm-hmm. and the family stories, and I want to get into all of that. The book is called Lost Restaurants of Chicago, and again, tomorrow, Thursday evening, January 24th at the Harold Washington Library, it's from 6 to 7:15. We're going to talk about that. They're going to talk about the book, The Lost Restaurants of Chicago, and Greg Borzo is going to be there, and Doug Sohn having a conversation. And there's going to be a lot of raffles and over $1,000 in prizes.
And also a lot of images. Both Doug and I will be running a PowerPoint with a lot of images, so over 100 images of different restaurants. So it won't just be two talking heads. We'll have plenty of scenes and people. And inside and outside of restaurants to jog all of your memories.
Great. Okay. All right. We'll talk more. Hang on, Greg. All right.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Greg Borzo is with us, author of Lost Restaurants of Chicago. He's written a bunch of books about Chicago, and we'll talk to him more right after we take this break for the news on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You can get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about lost bars, clubs, and businesses of Chicago that we miss, that we used to go to all the time. They're not around anymore, and we miss them. And we're also going to cover the Oscar snubs. I'll go through the nominations and talk about that as well. The book that we're talking about now is Lost Restaurants of Chicago. Greg Borzo is the author. He's written several books about the city. This is the latest one, and it's about restaurants that have closed down and reminiscing about them and talking about their history and all that really cool stuff. And again, tomorrow night, Thursday, January 24th, he's going to be hosting a book launch party at Harold Washington Library, 400 South State Street. Starts at 6 p.m. Doug Sohn from Hot Dogs is going to be there. There's going to be a PowerPoint presentation with images of these great restaurants. restaurants, and they're going to talk about all the history of these great restaurants. And there's going to be a free raffle with over $1,000 in prizes. And for more information, you can check out our Facebook page, but also gregborzo.com. That's B-O-R-Z-O. And let's welcome Greg back to the show. Greg, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, let's talk about some of your favorite stories in the book. Because I know a lot of these restaurants that you talk about had a rich history. What were some of the more surprising or some of the more interesting stories that you got while researching this about these restaurants?
Oh, there are just so many. I think maybe one that jumps off the page is Flo's. It's a restaurant that used to have a young lady in a scantily clad outfit swinging back and forth on a trapeze in front of the restaurant. Mm. This was to attract people in. And it was on Randolph, at the corner of Randolph and Madison,
yep,
right downtown.
Yep.
And so Flo's, that's not very PC. It might not go over well today, but it might have brought in customers to that restaurant. There's just so many. The Black Hawk, of course, became famous for big band music. Not only the great food they were serving, but it was broadcast on, in fact, WGN across the country. The music playing in that restaurant while people were dancing, that music was broadcast around the country, and it got to be so popular that WGN installed a ticker tape in the restaurant so that the bands playing there could take requests.
Wow.
Talk about a big night on the town.
Mm.
You'd go out and have a great dinner, and you'd dance, and you'd be a part of that at the Black Hawk. So, there are just so many restaurants. The Schaller's on South Halstead opened 136 years.
Wow.
Basically as a neighborhood restaurant, tavern, community center, gathering place down there in Bridgeport. That's just phenomenal. The people, think about how many meals and beers and greetings occurred in that restaurant over 136 years.
It's amazing the history of that restaurant. You touch upon that, and one of the reasons why it closed is because that 92-year-old Jack Schaller lived upstairs. He died in 2016, and the tavern lost its tax exemption that was grandfathered into it to the owner. So that's one of the reasons why it closed.
That was a factor.
And it hosted all three Chicago White Sox World Series wins.
Isn't that something?
And the World's Columbian Exposition of 1893. I mean, the history of this place is incredible.
You're talking old.
You mentioned that a lot of the restaurants in Chicago started out as taverns. Is there a reason for that?
Well, I guess Chicago was a rough town. They were not known for fine restaurants. It was a town with a lot of people traveling through, being on the river and lake. Taverns also appeal to ethnic groups, and so your Germans had their style of tavern. Other ethnic groups, Irish and Italian or whoever, had different styles of restaurants and bars and taverns for gathering people. So that's just part of probably a big part of our ethnic background.
Mm-hmm. Is that they started out as taverns, and a lot of these taverns would serve food, but it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And the meals got better. It was it was just sort of like tavern food at first, but then things started to change, and the restaurant started to serve great foods.
Some of them, yes, morphed into fine restaurants. In many cases, the food was free to begin with to get people in to drink, and eventually they would kick it up a notch. Julien's started as a tavern, ended up being a world famous restaurant for magic shows.
Mm.
Julien's also on Irving Park. It created something called Chicago Magic, which was tableside or close up magic. So the magician would come right to your table and do their tricks, and even though you were sitting right in front of them, you could not catch what they were doing.
Right. Right. Yeah, there's a real
great place.
Yeah. And so some of the other and many of these restaurants that you featured, these lost restaurants that you featured, a lot of these were family owned and run by families for many years, correct?
Yes. Uh-huh. The Monasteros had a family heritage, and that one closed because a church came along and said, "We'd like to build a church right where your restaurant and parking lot is."
Right.
So could we please buy your property?
Yeah.
And that was the Romanian Pentecostal Church. And I guess they made such a good offer that Monasteros up there on Devon near Pulaski sold and closed.
Mm. Yeah. And that was another great restaurant. Yeah. That place was great. It had a lot of it was a beautiful looking restaurant, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that
very elegant.
Beautiful looking. And I guess that the offer must have been pretty great then.
Speaking of families, since the book has come out, I've heard so many additional stories. I could write another book just about people's reactions to the book and the restaurants in the book. For example, a gal emailed me and said, "You know, you saved our Christmas because we used to sit around every year and just fight. But this year, we looked through your book and we remembered all these fun restaurants we had been to, and we had a great time."
So that's great, and the feedback's been really good. Let's mention another one that was in the South Loop. That was Blackie's, which was at Polk and Clark.
Yeah,
that was a big time restaurant for stars, right? The Rat Pack, the Three Stooges, the Marx Brothers, Lena Horne. They would all hang out at this place, Blackie's. Talk a little bit about that place.
They would not only hang out there, but I've heard stories of food fights and crazy parties. At Blackie's, of course, all bars and restaurants had to close at some hour, be it midnight or 2 or 4. But when Blackie's was supposed to close, they simply locked the door and pulled the curtain over the windows, and they continued to party. So it was really party central for the stars, probably mostly because of its close location to the train station there at Dearborn and Polk. That station had direct lines from California, so people jumping off the train from Hollywood, maybe staying over to catch a train the next day to New York, or coming into town to give a show, would head to Blackie's for a meal and some drinks and relaxation. So that was a pretty fun place. And that was another one run by a family, several generations of a family, and eventually they just ran out of steam.
Yeah.
No one in the family wanted to continue the business.
That seems to be kind of a common thread here about that, because, I mean, that's what happened with Sabatino's. They didn't want to continue to run the business because it's hard. You know, like you mentioned, it's really, really hard to run a restaurant, and it takes a lot of time.
Yes, absolutely.
But
that was very common.
Blackie's lasted until 2017, though. That's a great run.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I'll tell you the one that I miss terribly is a legendary place in Lincoln Square, Chicago Brauhaus, which is is one of my favorite restaurants. Was one of my favorite restaurants in the city. I spent a significant amount of time hanging out in Lincoln Square, and I've been there. I had been there millions of times. The food was great. The atmosphere was amazing. It was like a party when you went to that place.
Another one, they closed in 2017. And it was a party. Live music, dancing. Sometimes people would make a parade right out the door into the Lincoln Square area, up and down the street, back into the restaurant. Lively foot stomping. Oompa music,
yeah.
A great loss. We've lost so many German restaurants. Chicago is such a strong German heritage, but many of them have closed over the years, and there's only a few left.
Yeah, that's too bad. I mean, because that was a very just distinctive. The food at that place was just fantastic at the Chicago Brauhaus, and it was a staple in that neighborhood, and it was at one time. Lincoln Square was a major German neighborhood with businesses.
Absolutely.
And it still has that kind of feel to it now, but not nearly as much as it did like when I was a kid.
Sure, there used to be Meyer's Deli, yep, and other German restaurants and businesses there, yeah.
And they did, in fact, rename the square in front of the restaurant to Kempf Plaza after the owners, the brothers.
That's right. What a nice touch.
Yeah. 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 Really, really great. Okay. Greg, hang on, okay?
Will do.
Okay. Greg Borzo is with us, author of Lost Restaurants of Chicago. Terrific book about, you know, we're reminiscing about some of these restaurants. And then we're going to talk about businesses and other places that we remember that don't exist anymore. Rich history of businesses and bars and clubs and restaurants in this city. And we're going to talk all about that. And again, tomorrow, Thursday, January 24th, they're hosting a book launch party. And Doug Sohn is going to be there with Greg. And they're going to be giving away some stuff in raffles. And there's going to be a PowerPoint presentation with images of these great restaurants and the history of these restaurants, and the book will be available as well. It's Lost Restaurants of Chicago. All right, we're going to come back and talk more with Greg after we take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. Coming up, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and coming up at 6 is your morning drive with Steve Cochran. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. My guest right now is Greg Borzo, author of several books about this city, the latest being Lost Restaurants of Chicago. There's an event tomorrow that you should check out. Starts at 6 p.m. at the Harold Washington Library, which is 400 South State Street. And it's tomorrow, the 24th. It's a book launch party, and Doug Sohn is going to be there as well. And you can pick up a copy of the book that we've been talking about, Lost Restaurants of Chicago. Greg, welcome back.
Thank you.
You also talk about the menus, you know, the actual menus that you would get at these restaurants, and some of them were so unique and original, and felt so different when you look at them. What were some of the stories there?
Well, many of them are literally pieces of art, beautifully designed and laid out, depicting just a mood, a style, whether it be elegance or craziness and fun. Everything from, you know, your R.J. Grunt's style of menu, which is very chaotic and fun, to something like the Empire Room at the Palmer House. So I was able to learn a lot from these menus. The Chicago History Museum has a great collection of old menus, and so you can glean all kinds of information from them. One old one from the New York restaurant on State Street here in Chicago put on its menu, "No scraps are taken off the floor and reserved at this restaurant." So that tells you that what's going on in some other ones.
That's fantastic. That is great. I also love that you mentioned that the Hyde Park restaurant, the House of Tiki's menu, had, I love this, it had layer after layer of stickers, because when the prices increased, they didn't make a new menu, they just put stickers with the price increase on it. I've seen that at other restaurants as well. That's crazy.
That place also had a sign in the window saying homemade jello. So, you know, you never know what you're going to run into at some of these places. And reading the menu from Cafe Bohemia was quite a trip. That's a place that was famous for game. And so not just pheasant and quail, but lion, rhinoceros, rattlesnake, elk, etc., alligator. And so Cafe Bohemia, close to Union Station, used to draw in tourists for those exotic meats.
And I'm looking at, it also says that the African lion with a Grand Marnier sauce was $16 back in 1979. And it's also must be fun to look back at the prices when you're looking at these old menus. Like,
oh yeah,
I mean, I'm looking at this at BG Foods in 1944, a triple decker sandwich was 30 cents.
Yep. So that would explain why somebody told me after the book came out a funny story about BG Foods.
Okay.
Again, a low-cost sandwich shop, really a small chain. And so this woman said to me, you know, it was great to see that picture of BG Foods in your book, because that's where my dad proposed to my mom.
Aww.
But she was so disappointed that she made him redo it again at a better restaurant.
That's great. That's great. I bet that, and the book is probably filled with great stories like that. It's Lost that, Restaurants, yes. Lost Restaurants of Chicago, a great idea for a book. And we love talking about the history of Chicago and places that we used to love. And we're going to continue talking about it in a little bit. But let's talk about the your first book, The Chicago L. How did you research it, and how did you write it, and what does the book really highlight?
Well, it's I researched it by writing the L myself, but then to get the history and the stories involved, you hit newspapers and corporate reports, business reports, company reports about the building of the L and the running of the L. And also I learned a lot from the community in Chicago of train fans. They are so knowledgeable, they're so dedicated, they're so interesting, and they're so helpful. I learned a lot from going to train fan meetings and from talking to people who are so knowledgeable. They could look at a picture and say, oh, that's got that blue and white sign on the left side. That means it's 1922.
Right.
Because they knew the signage, they knew the equipment, they knew which side of the tracks the trains were operating on year by year by year, and so a lot of it came from fellow train fans. Many of the pictures came from the CTA. Mm-hmm. CTA has a great photo archive, and I just loved working on the book, and it's been well received. I learned so much about it that it makes me love to ride the L more than I ever have.
Yeah.
And it's funny, sometimes I see a tourist looking at the map and trying to figure out where to go, and I'll give them some directions, and then sometimes they'll look at me and they say, are you sure? And I say, well, yeah. I am sure.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, I told you where I grew up, Greg. I mean, right next to an L station. The people on the platform could actually look into my bedroom window. But it was
well. That reminds me of a story that I heard, and that was that someone along the Ravenswood line, might have been you, used to put a mannequin in the window of a scantily clad woman. Just to watch the reaction of the people on the train when it went by.
I wish I would have thought of that. But the thing is, you know, like the train, you know, unless it was an express or a B train. Remember those days, the A and B, the A and B trains. It would always stop. It would never go past my window. So there would be a perfect time for people to look in and see a scantily. I should have thought. I can't believe I should have thought of that.
Other people put signs like Happy Birthday, Joe, and things like that because they knew somebody was coming by that day.
Especially
the Brown Line, the Ravenswood Line, very friendly neighborhood kind of line. That's my favorite line.
Me too. It's my favorite. You know why it's my favorite line, Greg? Because you get
why
you get all you know. You start out at Lawrence. You start out at street level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you go up, and then you get, and then it becomes a subway too. At some point, it turns back around. No, it doesn't become a subway, but it starts at street level,
It's like a tour, an elevated tour, because most of it's elevated all the way around the loop.
It's interesting because you know this is a true story. When I was living up in Albany Park, about four blocks away from the Wilson Lawrence and Wilson stop. I was going through any kind of anxiety or depression, I would just get on the L and ride it from Lawrence all the way around back to Lawrence again, just to sit on the train and maybe think about things. And it was very relaxing for me, you know? So,
you've got it bad.
Yeah, I do. So
I know the feeling though.
Yeah.
And not only a way to relax, but I've often connected with people.
Yes.
On the L in just a casual, friendly way. You see somebody two or three times during a week,
yep.
And you'd strike up a little conversation, and But boy, I ended up in a book club that way.
Oh, there you go.
Noticing what people were reading, and then they invited me into their book club and stuff. So it's a community space. It's a shared space. It's not a private automobile where you're by yourself.
Right, you're right.
And I like that aspect of the L.
Yeah. Well, the book is called The Chicago L. It's available, and the latest book is Lost Restaurants of Chicago. And again, tomorrow, the 24th, a book launch party at Harold Washington Library starting at 6 p.m. Greg, real pleasure talking to you, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, same here. I hope to come back and have another chat someday. Yeah. This has been so much fun.
Great. I'm glad you had a good time. Have a good morning, okay? Thank you, Greg.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. All right, Greg Borzo, everybody. The latest book is called Lost Restaurants of Chicago. We'll take a break for the news, and when we come back, we're going to jump into bars and clubs and other businesses that we miss that are no longer around. So we're going to reminisce about lost businesses of Chicago. We love to do that here on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we'll be back after the news after this. Yeah. Tom Slick. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wild Card Wednesday. And it didn't take long for a TV theme to show up, as they often do on Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200, Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, me Wild Card Wednesday! Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Of course, it's the Tom Slick TV theme song. 301 area code requested that. All right. Oh, boy. So we are. We were talking about lost restaurants of Chicago, just in the past segments, and it's always fun to go back in time and remember a lot of the places maybe where you grew up or you went when you were a kid or your family went when you were younger, and remember those places and you kind of miss them. And the book that we were talking about has a lot of great stories about the histories of these special places. And we concentrated exclusively on restaurants during that conversation because that's what the book's about. But now we're going to talk about, like, stores and businesses and bars and clubs and retailers and stuff like that that you used to go to that you miss. And if you want to jump in with any of your memories in those places, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Getting a little nostalgic here. Dan, was there anything in your neighborhood when you were growing up that's not there anymore that you would miss?
Yeah, I'll continue on the restaurant ones.
Yeah.
The Blue Angel and Sally's.
Oh, man.
Were the 24-hour restaurants in the area.
Yeah.
The ones that were around and open when, I was in my 20s and we'd go out and hit the town and then be coming to look home and for places to stop. And so I've been to Ellie's, which replaced Blue Angel, which is nice. And I know Cozy Corner, which took over the Sally spot, just opened within the last week and half ago. And I've heard good things about both. You know, it's just different, though. You know, both of them were kind of just so old school and had that charm and character that you don't find much anymore.
Both of those places I've been to many times, as you know, Dan. Blue Angel was a particular favorite of mine. Because, the Blue Angel was so cool because, you go in the back door, and you've got that the dining room area with the booths and the tables and stuff like that. And then the counter, you walk around into the other room. They've got tables, booths, and that in there.
Right.
But then there was a counter. So there were, two parts of it. And what was amazing was that even at 3 o'clock in the morning, both sides would be open. They would never. Had you ever been there when they closed the dining room?
I had been in times where the dining room was closed, mm-hmm. but it was always kind of that was always one of the fun things walking in and being like, how busy are we going to be tonight?
Yeah. Well, obviously the dining room would be open at 3 o'clock in the morning because they get it's one of the mm-hmm. only places in the neighborhood where you can go if you've been out to a bar or something. But yeah, I loved that place. I just thought the Blue Angel was great. I mentioned anytime we talk about the Blue Angel Franchisees,
mm-hmm.
that was my go-to order because a lot of times I would get breakfast, your basic sort of like whatever, eggs, bacon, that kind of thing. But the Franchisee, I'm telling you, just one of the greatest food creations of all time. And they were great at the Blue Angel. Yeah, those are places that both Sally's is great. Sally's was great too. So what does it look like now? What's the facade like now? I've not been up there.
It's much cleaner. I don't know, is the best way to say it. I mean, both places are much more modern and
yeah. But I see Ellie's all the time because we go. My parents and I go to the movie theater in Skokie.
Yeah,
and we go down Milwaukee. We turn up on to Central and Milwaukee right there.
Yeah, I haven't been inside Cozy Corner, but it seems like it's kind of retained that kind of like old homely feel to it, but just updated. With, yeah, you know, nicer.
I love the sign outside of Sally's. It was so iconic.
Yeah.
You know, and did they replace the sign with something like completely? I mean, obviously, it's not going to have the same logo or the lights or anything like that.
Right.
But Sally's, that sign was iconic.
Sure.
So, all right. Well, there's a couple of other places. If you guys want to jump in here, 312-981-7200 is the number. We've got a whole bunch of places that in, you know, where you grow up that completely disappear. You know, I grew up at Addison and Ravenswood, and we would shop on Lincoln Avenue. That's where you would go to shop. You would walk, you would walk south on Lincoln Avenue, and it was always like, you know, it was Belmont, Ashland, and Lincoln. That intersection right there was like the heart of the shopping district on Lincoln Avenue. And there are so many stores that I went to when I was a kid that are no longer there. And I mean, everything changes. We all know that, and things move on. But you have so many, memories attached to those places. I bought my first album at a record store called The Record Roost, which was on Lincoln, but also had, an entrance on the other side on Belmont. So, you know, you could actually enter on Belmont, or you can enter on Lincoln, and the store was in between. And it was a place called The Record Roost. It was just an old school record store. And that's where I bought my first album. That's where I bought Black Sabbath, Paranoid. And now the last time I've not been in that neighborhood in a while, but the last time that I was hanging out in that neighborhood or there, it was a Subway sandwich shop. That's what it turned into. So that's what it was. And there was also another record store right almost directly across the street from Dinkles Bakery. And I believe Dinkles Bakery is still there. I'm almost positive Dinkles is still there, because that place is sort of legendary. And I'm pretty sure. Dan, do you know if Dinkles Bakery is still?
I've had it within the last year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I mean, that's like the bakery that you went to in that neighborhood. There's no question about it. And it's been there forever. But like almost directly across the street, and I think it's a Starbucks now, that was also another record store. And that's where I would go to get my 45s. Like, you would go in. 45s, by the way, are vinyl records that are smaller, but they rotate faster on your turntable. And it's a single record with a B-side and an A-side. But, you know, I used to go to that record store all the time, too. I can't remember the name of it. I don't remember the record store, what the name was. But that was where they kept the top 40 records behind the counter in like what looked like mail slots. You know what I mean? Like the mailboxes, little mailboxes that you would put, you know, and it was like a wooden shelving unit, and each shelf had like a record, a stack of records in it, a stack of 45s in it. And you would get the top 40 list, usually the WLS list. You would have the big 89 WLS list, and I've had many of those take home lists with Mr. Steve King's mysterious picture. Do you remember Steve King's mysterious picture from the mid 70s?
Yes,
he's like in some forest or something. He's got like he's got fantastic hair in this, but that was when he was doing nights at LS back in the early mid 70s, and so. You know, you would pick the singles that you want just by number. Like, what was the number one single? I want the number one single. I want the number five single. I want the number 12 single. And then the guy behind you would grab the 45s in the middle. And that was the record store that was almost directly across the street from Dinkles, which I believe is a Starbucks now. So, but those were, you know, I mean, that neighborhood that I was there, I would go out to Lincoln Avenue every day. We would walk down Lincoln Avenue every day, especially on the weekends. And that's where you shopped. We didn't have a mall or anything. We would go on Lincoln Avenue because there were so many different types of stores and businesses lining the streets of Lincoln Avenue. There's a lot of memories on that street, for sure. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. We get a bunch of people here. Here's Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm good. What's up?
Well, I remember going to the Well of the Sea. I still have a menu from there. The College Inn. Mm. And before McDonald's, there was Wimpy's.
Right, Wimpy's.
Do you remember that place?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And then there was a restaurant called the Ivanhoe where they had puppets do operas.
Was the Ivanhoe like at Clark and Wellington, in that area?
I couldn't tell you right now. Okay. I was dating at the time.
Okay.
And, oh, golly, what was I going to tell you? Shopping. It used to be State Street, Boston Netcher Store, Mandel's, Fair, Carson Perry, Marshall Fields.
There was a ton of so many of those places are a ton of those places. I was thinking of the Ivanhoe. You know, the Ivanhoe. I was getting that confused. The Ivanhoe restaurant is different than what the Ivanhoe Theater. The Ivanhoe Theater is what I was thinking of. That was Clark near like Diversey, that area.
3000 North Clark.
Yeah, that was where they had they would do a lot of shows at the Ivanhoe, and that's actually where for a while Hellcab played there. For the 800 years that Hellcab ran, played at the Ivanhoe for a very long time. Elizabeth, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And here is Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Nick. How you doing, buddy?
All right, man. What's up?
Oh, I was just wondering if you ever heard of Johnny's Snack Shop on Central and Montrose. It was a little dive place.
Absolutely. Absolutely,
yeah, by
Mike.
C. Davis and Toots.
Yeah.
And, hey,
yep.
Listening to you talk, we're from the same neighborhoods. I lived at Addison and Central. When you talk about Luther North, I lived by Cumberland and Foster. I lived by Lincoln Avenue. I remember the Bargain Town on Lincoln Avenue.
Sure, sure.
It turned into a Toys R Us, I think. I mean,
it was
just listening to you, it's so awesome.
It's Toys
we're so
R
close
Us.
In age,
and
too.
It's now an Ace Hardware, if I'm not mistaken.
Is it really?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. And by the way, you said you lived at Foster and Cumberland. So did I. Just west of Cumberland.
Yes, I was west of Cumberland on Pottawatomie back in the 80s.
Wow. All right, because I was in one of those, you know the complexes that all look exactly the same, the apartment complexes?
Yes, I lived
in one of those. I lived in the Honeybee complex for about...
Oh, yeah, right, okay. Yeah, I was in a 6 flat.
Yeah.
Just
right.
North of that.
There you go. All right, Mike. Thanks, man.
Yeah, take care, buddy.
Right,
have
buddy.
A good night.
You too,
God
man.
Bless.
Take care, buddy. There you go. Thank you, Mike. And then Roseanne is on WGN. Hi, Roseanne.
Hi, Roseanne.
Yeah, I was telling your producer, you were talking about the Blue Angel. I said, the Blue Angel, I remember, was on Michigan Avenue near the Conrad Hilton. And it was sort of a Caribbean type. You know, by the bar, they had sand on the floor.
Oh, wow.
And, the lady was talking about, I thought the puppets were at Coombs Home. And Ivanhoe was noted for the catacombs.
Ivanhoe was known, that's right, for the catacombs, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, we were unusual, my brother, we really liked soup. So when we went downtown, we loved to go to that Pixley and Allers and get the soup with the little oyster red crackers.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Sunday, sometime later on, they opened, did you ever hear of the Forum?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I always liked to go there recently because they had all those little, bowls of stuff, and you could get such a variety of things.
Right, yeah.
And then, how about the Jamaican Village?
Jamaican Village, no. I don't think I've been.
Yeah, that was in the Rush Street area, and it was just like it says, with the entertainment, Calypso, and all that.
Wow. All right, Roseanne, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Okay, I've never been to that other Blue Angel that she was talking about. Never been to that one, but... So I'm sure there were a lot of restaurants and places that had the same name over the years. I'm getting a bunch of texts in, too, and we haven't even touched upon retailers or businesses or bars and stuff like that, but we will, and we want to talk to you. So 312-981-7200 for talking text. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. A Wild Card Wednesday continues. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday! That was Dexy's Midnight Runners with Come On Eileen. 262 area code requested that. So get your requests in, too. Any artist, any song, any thing. 312-981-7200. Welcome back. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 floors above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. The Oscar nominations were announced yesterday, and I have thoughts on that, and we'll talk about some of the surprises and some of the snubs and talk about the nominations themselves. With you guys as well. But right now we're talking about forgotten Chicago area retailers and bars and clubs and stores and things like that. And we would love to hear from you with your memories about places that aren't around anymore that you miss. 312-981-7200 for talk or text. Here are some texts. 847 area code says a wonderful restaurant that closed long ago was El Bianco. It was fabulous. 815 area code, on a special occasion, my dad and mom used to bring us to Chuck Cavallini's in Midlothian. When I was a kid, and I think it was Midlothian, it seemed a really long way away from our house because we lived in Alsip and I went to Marist. It was almost like going to a different big city. In addition, the House of Hughes is the place that we used to drive past and never ate there. It's all gone now. Let's see, 847 area code says, two come to mind. One, the Como Inn. Oh, yes, the Como Inn. When did the Como Inn close? I mean, it was around, I think it closed, what, maybe, what, early 2000s? The Como Inn? Because you used to be able to see it right off the Kennedy, right off the expressway. And
2001.
And it was it's referenced a lot in Glengarry Glen Ross. So it's one of Mammoth's favorite places, Como Inn. I only went to the Como Inn once. It was obviously a long time ago. How about Parkey's Hot Dog Stand in Oak Park? That would be Mark from Libertyville. 773 area code says Peter's Diner by DePaul. Don't remember that place. The Belden Deli. Classic. You know what that turned into, Dan, the Belden Deli?
What's that?
A Tower Records, which is also gone. So, you know who used to love the Belden Deli?
Who's that?
Eddie Schwartz. He talked about the Belden Deli all the time. I think he lived like right near the Belden Deli, and they would deliver. But yeah, he was a big fan of the Belden Deli. I don't know if there was a night that Chicago Ed was on the air where he wouldn't at least mention the Belden once. Jackson Lincolnwood, I remember that. Myron and Phil's Flukies. Is Flukies closed on Peterson? Wow, man. Because it was Flukies on there was a Flukies on Peterson. I used to drive past it all the time when I was working on Roy Leonard's Going Out Guide, and we had an office right out of Peterson. Used to drive past it all the time, and I ate there many times. Flukies, Dr. Jazz Ice Cream. I remember that place, and of course the Zephyr, which is on Ravenswood. It was not there anymore. Now it's a fake Irish pub. I can't remember what it's called, but it used to be right on that corner. It was Ravenswood and Wilson. It was Wilson and Ravenswood? Yeah, Wilson and Ravenswood. It was Wilson and Ravenswood. Dan, had you ever gone to the Zephyr for ice cream?
I did not.
Was it Wilson and Ravenswood? Do you know what the name of the fake Irish bar is that's there now, corner of Wilson and Ravenswood?
I'll have to look it up.
It's like O'Shaughnessy's, maybe? Or according to Keegan Michael Key, O'Shag Hennessy.
That seemed like a legit Irish bar the last time I was in there after it took over new ownership.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I went in there and there were some definite strong Irish. Behind the bar, on the other side of the bar. I think it's still legit.
Okay. All right, and it is O'Shaughnessy's, right? Is that what it's called?
I can't remember the name, but I know what you're talking about. It's not far from my old apartment. You're talking about the one in Albany Park?
No, Wilson and Ravenswood.
Oh, okay. This one was near Wilson, and I thought you were talking about this other one that just changed hands as well.
Well, what was it? What was this? Where was this
it
one?
It was on, let's see.
Because I lived in that Albany Park.
Near Wilson, let's see. Montrose and Wilson are perpendicular.
Yeah.
So it was not far from Wilson and Montrose.
So in between? No, Milton and Montrose run the same
They
same
do,
direction.
Okay, yeah. Okay. This was near, it was on Montrose a few blocks a few blocks east of Kimball.
Oh.
Probably about three or four blocks east of Kimball.
On Montrose, okay.
Yep. Right. It was an old Irish bar, and then it switched hands. It's still definitely Irish.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
And O'Shaughnessy's Public House.
It is O'Shaughnessy's. Okay, yeah, that's what's now where the Zephyrs used to be. All right, everybody, hang on, okay. And if you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We're talking about places that don't exist anymore that we used to love, and we got more coming up after the news, which is after this. I didn't recognize this at all. Wildcard Wednesday, Yimmy Wildcard Wednesday. And it's any artist, any song, anything. And that's the theme from The Bionic Woman. That did not ring a bell at all for me. Lou requested that on a Wild Card Wednesday. If you want to get your requests in, it's 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to talk about the Oscars a little bit later on. I'll break it down for you. We got all the nominations here. We're going to talk about the surprises and the snubs as well. But right now we're talking about places that no longer exist in the Chicago area. We were talking about the new book, Lost Restaurants of Chicago, and that got us thinking about all kinds of businesses and stores and retailers and bars and stuff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's talk to Sheila on WGN. Hi, Sheila.
Yes, I was in the late 50s at the Shea Paree, and I saw Sammy Davis Jr., and the table next to us had the Kennedy sisters.
Wow.
And the funny thing was that one of the Kennedy sisters still had the price tag on her shoe.
At the old Shea Paree. And a lot of big stars came through the Shea Paree.
Oh, they sure did.
Yeah.
And also I wanted to tell you, I'm glad you enjoyed Ireland, because I've been there 5 times.
Oh.
And my parents were both born there, so it's a dear place to me.
What part of Ireland are your folks from?
County Clare.
Beautiful.
Near the Shannon Airport.
Oh, beautiful. It's so beautiful. It was such a beautiful trip, really. Amazing.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Sheila, have a great morning.
Thank you.
Okay. And he's sitting in the Shea Paree watching Sammy Davis Jr. That's a night right there. 872 area codes. What about Neo, the Chicago nightclub, 1979 to 2015? Been to Neo several times. By the way, that was not very far. Neo was not very far from where the Belden Deli was and where the Tower Records was. Not very far. 225 area code says, what about the places on Whiskey Row, which is now Ashland Avenue? Whiskey Row. Huh. Here's Joanne on WGN. Hi, Joanne. Joanne?
Hello.
Joni.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Joni.
I'm just calling regarding Fritzl's. It's kind of like a Shea Paree, but without so much entertainment, but you got to see a lot of stars there. I saw Carol Channing there and Anthony Quinn and a few. We used to go there for celebrations, for birthdays and things. It was a little pricey, but it was just an experience.
Yeah, where was it?
Boots.
Where was it, Joni?
I believe it's on, I can't remember. I think it was on Michigan Avenue.
Oh, on Michigan. Okay.
Yeah, it was in the 60s. I worked downtown in the 60s. And I don't know when it started.
Yeah.
And I wanted to look that up, but it wasn't there long after I had left the Loop. And we were so disappointed that it was gone. But it was just really an interesting place. They had all the pictures of the stars on the walls and the leather booths. And they were like horseshoe-shaped. And there was mirrors on the walls. It was very elegant, very nice.
Very nice.
But I don't know when it left and and how long it was there.
Fritzl's, okay.
But like you said, it was an attraction for the stars.
Right. Okay, Joni, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
All right, here is Jeffrey on WGN. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hello?
Hi, yeah, you're on.
Yeah, listen, I'm going to ask you something. I know you collect monster stuff. Do you remember, were you ever in the store, House of Monsters?
House of Monsters. Where was it?
It was around, I think, about Milwaukee and Pulaski.
Okay.
I think they cross over those two streets.
They do. They do cross over. And that's currently my neighborhood. House of Monsters. I probably went there when I was a kid. I don't really remember, though.
Because this wasn't that long ago. This was only about maybe 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, no, then I don't think I've ever been there.
The guy sadly went out of business, but if you love monster stuff, this guy had everything.
Mm.
There were two partners, actually.
Right.
And later on, when they went out of business, the guy from Horribles got a lot of their merchandise.
Oh, Horribles, I know. I know the people from Horribles, absolutely.
And they went out of business.
They did. It was a few years ago. They were in Berwyn. And They were great because they used to come to the Flashback Horror Convention that all the time, and they had a great relationship with Rich Coase, with Sven Gulli.
Right, well, I know that. Could I ask you something? Are there any other monster stuff, any places around in Chicago now, or they're all gone?
No, I think they're all gone. I don't know if there's a big, because everything, I really think that if you're going to buy collectibles and stuff like that, 90% of the people do it online. It's, because you can find anything online, and I think a lot of people, if they're going to do the horror collectibles or the monster collectibles, I think most people go via the internet.
Well, because the only reason is I had heard the rumor, because somebody went to one of these conventions where they had horror stuff, and right. They were telling me about a place in Chicago, and I'm trying to locate it.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we can look into it, because, we got a lot of connections with the people at Flashback Weekend, because Flashback Weekend, of the horror convention, of which I'm one of the hosts, they have a vendor room. And there are local people and people from around the country who basically travel around, from different conventions to different conventions, selling their stuff. But I know that there are a lot of local vendors who show up at Flashback. And so, maybe we can get some information. I can ask Mike Kurz or Mia Kurz, if they have information about, what shops are available in Chicago for that kind of stuff. Jeffrey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Give us a call at 312-981-7200. All right, here are some places that are gone. Bars and clubs. How about the Artful Dodger? Dan, did you ever go to the Artful Dodger?
I did not.
It was a divey and dodgy was the best way to describe it. It was a Bucktown corner bar in a residential area that featured a small dance floor in the back where ill-advised moves were busted to 80s favorites. Many of the sugary drinks contained glow sticks. Despite efforts to save the turn-of-the-century building, the Dodger closed in 2005 after more than 20 years to make way for condos. Yeah, I'd been to the Artful Dodger. That was a weird place. Let's see. How about Biddy Mulligan's? Yeah, man, Biddy Mulligan's! Yeah! See, Biddy Mulligan's was a seedy rock club in the northern reaches of Sheridan Road, just south of the cemetery that keeps Leafy Evanston at bay. The club opened and closed a comical number of times, at one point reopening for a whopping 4 months before shuttering up again. Much of the oft-promised renaissance of Howard Street, a new revitalized Biddy's, was always just around the corner, but Biddy's did have an admirable history. In the 70s and 80s, Coco Taylor played there many times, and the Smashing Pumpkins rocked it in 1989. Biddy Mulligan's was, that was a big club, man. Lots of bands played there. I love the fact that they mentioned how many times it closed and reopened, because it was never in good condition. I don't think, whenever we went there, if they were going to have a grand reopening, when you have a grand reopening, Dan, normally, you want to do some improvements to the property or to the business.
Right.
It always seemed worse when they reopened. I don't know. I don't know how they managed to do that consistently, but lots of memories at Biddy Mulligan's, man. Biddy Mulligan's. Yeah, Biddy Mulligan's, man. the Big Nasty. Oh, my God. One of the worst places in the world. Dan, you were too young to ever really go to the Big Nasty, right?
I was too young.
Yeah. Okay, the Big Nasty. Do you know what the Big Nasty was?
I do not.
Okay, it was a bar. It was a Lincoln Park bar. It was on Lincoln, south of Fullerton, not very far from Oz Park. You know where Oz Park is, right?
I do. Yes.
All right. So, and there's a strip of bars. There used to be a strip of bars. The Body Politic Theater used to be there, and but they had the Bamboo Bernie's was another bar, where they had the big, tropical drinks that were on fire, and you'd share them with like 10 straws, and you'd get completely annihilated at that place. I mean, like blackout drunk. And they had a volleyball court in the middle of the bar with sand in it. I'm not kidding, man. Bamboo Bernie's. And so I don't know. We ended up going there one night, and I got completely annihilated. And I actually blacked out. I got so loaded, I blacked out. And because of these were like these tropical drinks, these big crazy tropical drinks that taste like there's no alcohol in them. You know what I mean? Like they're all sweet and we're all like, yeah, yeah. And then half an hour later, I'm like, what's my name? But I kind of blacked out and I woke up playing volleyball. I was on the ground in the sand and I was like, oh, I'm playing volleyball. All right. Anyway, that was another one of those fantastic Linkin Park bars that were, but now Bamboo Bernie's was located across the street from the Big Nasty. Here's the Big Nasty. Okay, you ready for this? It's a ridiculous Linkin Park bar, and you know that area, especially like in the 80s and 90s. It was just a nightmare. Just a nightmare. Drunks in the street throwing up all over the place. I'm not exaggerating. Like on a Saturday night, we used to do the show. We did this play called Live, and we did a run of it at the Body Politic. It ran for about a year at the Body Politic after we ran it at the Factory. And it was a late night show. We would do it Fridays and Saturdays at 10:30. So we'd get out at around midnight, quarter to one, at the height of idiocy on this stretch of Lincoln Avenue, to the point where they'd had beat cops out on the street to keep people from not running around in the street and vomiting everywhere. I mean, it was that ridiculous. So anyway, so that, you know, but I went to Big Nasty's twice. Once just to go, twice because the girl I was dating wanted to go. And, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So here's the Big Nasty. Terrible Linkin Park bar filled with maniac, you know, like college student drunk idiots, okay? And here's the, you know, you can get low, everybody, the shots, jello shots, everybody's just, it's one of those bars where everybody goes in there, it's loud, they're playing music, lights are flashing, everybody goes in there to just get annihilated. That's the only reason they go. Here's the added bonus, Dan. For $4, if I remember correctly, $3 or $4, you could buy a can of Silly String and go nuts with it. And that's what they did. You want to talk about a nightmare?
Ugh.
I mean, everybody's shooting Silly String all over the bar at each other's faces, and then they're so drunk that people are spending like $80 to buy cans of Silly String just so they can... And could you imagine working at that bar?
I was going to say, how is that ever clean?
It's never clean. I mean, you know, I lasted... The first time I went in there, I lasted 15 minutes. I lasted 15 minutes. I go, I got to get the hell out of here. And people are squirting Silly String all over the place. There was only one decent bar in that strip, because all of them sucked. They were all loaded with morons, but there was one decent bar on that strip, and I can't remember. It was a storefront bar. It had one name. It was just a little like dive bar. It was like a neighborhood. It had neighborhood people, regulars in there. Storkies? I'm probably totally wrong about that. It was the kind of bar, Dan, you know, you would go to after they sponsored your softball game. It was that kind of bar. And it didn't fit in on that block at all. Like, it did not fit in at all. So that was the bar that we went to. Like, if we were gonna have some drinks, that's where we went. But the Big Nasty was just a nightmare.
Sturch's.
That's it. Is it still around?
It is closed 2238 North Lane.
That's it. That's the place. That was the only decent bar in that. It was the only decent bar in that neighborhood. And of course, that's closed too. Mention the Big Nasty to any Chicagoan who went there, and they'll undoubtedly respond with two words: Silly String. Yes, the era of bachelorette frat party run amok. Right, said Fred, blasting in your eardrums. It was utopia for any bro within a 10-mile radius. The Big Nasty. Would be full of recently graduated sorority girls, leering frat boys. They're all drunk, gyrating, horny, and shooting Silly String all over the place. Nightmare. Nightmare, that place. All right, let's take a quick break. We're talking about businesses that are gone. We've been covering a little bars here, and we've got a whole bunch of texts coming in and calls at 312-981-7200. God, the Big Nasty. Ugh. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? Kevin requesting the Monkees with Some of Shelley's Blues. Welcome back, everybody. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich coming up after that. And also the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. As you know, we're in the beautiful Allstate Skyline Studios. And there's almost basically ceiling to floor windows that are behind me, on my left and on my right behind me. And I just looked out the windows, and there is no visibility outside right now. This fog rolled in. It's like a John Carpenter movie out there right now. So if you're out in this, be careful and drive safely, because this fog just completely rolled in. And I mean, I can barely see lights outside. It's really crazy. It's enveloped the whole east part where, you know. So anyway, it's a little creepy out there. Be careful. Very foggy on this Wednesday morning. 773 area code says, my parents opened, we're talking about businesses that no longer exist that we miss in Chicago, bars and clubs, and we were talking restaurants a little bit earlier and retail stores and things like that. 312-981-7200. My parents opened a tavern in 1949 in Bridgeport. I was seven. It was great. On weekends, families gathered. We lived in the back, so kids would go in the back and play. No one got drunk. On the west and east side of Halstead, there was a tavern on every corner. All the owners knew each other. It was all friendly with no rivalry. I could go on. It was a great time growing up. Those are great memories. That's a pretty cool memory right there. Mark in Skokie says Ashkenaz was a Jewish delicatessen on Morris Avenue. No one has been able to ever match it. Best fluffy French toast, lox, bagels, etc. Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin said Woolworth's Diner was great. Awesome food and waitresses were so fun. Yeah, that's amazing. People don't remember that you could actually eat at Woolworth's. We had a Woolworth's on Lincoln Avenue, you know, right around that area that I was talking about before. I think it was Lincoln and School. Right in the corner of Lincoln and School was a Woolworth's. It was your five and dime. And they had like a food counter there. I think it was a diner. And you could do some shopping, you know, buy some stuff, and then, like, sit down and have a meal. 773 area code, shout out to Mr. Steers on Lincoln Avenue. What a great salad bar. Mr. Steers, yeah. Yeah, that's right across the street from where the Woolworths was. That's also Lincoln and School. And that's a, oh, man, what is the name of that place now? It's a breakfast joint that, maybe it's not there anymore, but we used to go there. It's real popular on Sundays, and it's basically essentially a breakfast place, and I can't remember the name of it. It's right on the corner of Lincoln and School, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's a very, very popular breakfast joint. Mr. Steer. Oh, man. All right. Here's Phil on WGN. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
First, I'd like to correct the location of Fritzl's. It was at Staten Lake, the northeast corner.
Oh, okay. Staten Lake, right there. Okay.
Yeah, and two others for great Chinese food, Cow Cow in Lincolnwood at Cicero and Pratt.
Okay.
And then finally, how could we not mention the London House at Wacker, Michigan?
Oh, yeah. Classic. London House, classic place.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Bringing back a lot of memories here. All right, Phil, thanks for the correction and everything.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Have a good morning. There's Phil helping us out. London House. Classic place. Let's see. How about Bucket O' Suds? Run by a hooch-making, jazz-loving, idiosyncratic, second-generation bartender named Joe Dano, the Bucket, as they called it, was the coolest dive bar in the city for 32 years and closed in 1996. Musicians like Urge Overkill, Chrissy Hynde, and Elvis Costello visited the bar at Belmont and Cicero, perhaps for the liqueurs Dano made, but most likely because of the charm of Dano himself. And there was only one Joe Dano and only one Bucket of Suds. Belmont and Cicero. That's where one of my favorite movie theaters when I was growing up was. It's right there. It's called the Luna. The Luna Theater. Saw a ton of movies there when I was young. You know what was distinctive? I think I mentioned this before, Dan. You know what was distinctive about the Luna Theater and what's also stupid
what
about
that?
It? They didn't have doors that went into the auditorium. They had curtains.
Oh, I remember you mentioning it.
So you could, and they had pinball machines and stuff in the lobby. So you could hear the popcorn popping. You could hear the people waiting and playing pinball machines and stuff. There was just curtains. There were no... You had to sit up front in the theater. The best seats at the Luna were like the second row. Because, you know, at least it'd be louder in your face when you'd be a little bit further away from the lobby, which only had a curtain between you and the you and the lobby. The Luna, Belmont and Cicero. There's another one we can, and another angle we can go. Maybe we can do this specifically at another time. Old movie theaters that don't exist anymore. I could go on for hours talking about all the old beautiful movie theaters that don't exist anymore. So, all right, we got a break here. The news is coming up, and then more. Buildings, businesses that don't exist in Chicago. All right, we'll be right back. I have not heard that song in 49 years. Even though it's not 49 years old. Wow. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You made Wild Card Wednesday! That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Get your request in. We'll play it a little bit. 309 area code requesting reunion with Life is a Rock. Oh, man. Man, in the 70s, anything could be a hit. Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. A very foggy morning down here. Man, and it just rolled in. So be careful. At least, you know, as I can tell, right in the downtown area, I'm looking right now north on Columbus is what I'm looking at. Heading, you know, looking at out the window here, northbound on Columbus, and it's really, really foggy. So be careful. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We've been talking about businesses in Chicago that no longer exist, and we miss them. We're talking bars, clubs, stores, retail. We were talking restaurants, if you want to jump in on that, and just reminiscing about that stuff. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Also, the Oscar nominations were announced yesterday morning, and I definitely have thoughts on it. And I'll cover those a little bit later on, and we'll talk about the snubs, and we'll talk about the surprises, and I'll give you all the information about the nominations and stuff. And then we've got a Blackhawks Express to play, a good Blackhawks Express. Once again, that'll be two good Blackhawks Expresses in a row to play, and that'll be coming up later. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's get back to our conversation, places that we miss. Here's Bill on WGN. Hi, Bill.
How about, I know I just mentioned Dan, you said you mentioned the Blackhawk already, but, you know, I don't know if you know, the Woolworths on State Street, I mean, you mentioned the Woolworths up on Lincoln.
Yeah.
The one on State Street had five different places to eat in there.
Mm-hmm.
It had two counters on the main floor, a cafeteria in the basement, and then they had the mezzanine because I used to eat there my lunch all the time I was going to school.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s. And then also, Walgreens at State and Madison had a counter and a cafeteria.
Oh, they did. Walgreens did?
Yeah, they had the counter on the main floor, and they had a full cafeteria in the basement.
Wow, I don't remember
that.
They
served great food, and then also Walgreens at State and Madison was still, you know, back years in the 60s.
Yeah.
And then the Walgreens at State and Randolph, it had a counter plus a full cafeteria in the basement.
Wow.
And then how about couple places gone. I forget the name of a place that was a real Jewish restaurant. It was at Wabash and Madison. It was in 5 South in the Mallard Building.
Mm.
They served great cabbage soup and stuff up there. It was a real true Jewish. I meant I went in there. I can't remember the name of it, but you'd go in there and eat. And I meant the people even they spoke. Most of the workers spoke Jewish or Yiddish, you know, they were.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you go back, Carson's on Wabash. You remember, it used to be the men's store, they called it. On that side, they had a cafeteria on the 8th floor that was back in the 50s and 60s and up until probably the mid-60s was strictly a men's cafeteria.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking about that a little bit earlier with the author of that book about how there were restrictions. There were restrictions at many, many diners and restaurants that were only for men.
So, there was a lot of them that way.
Yeah. Bill, thank you for the call.
How about Wimpy's?
Wimpy's.
The hamburger.
Somebody mentioned that one already. Yeah.
Oh, they did. Okay. Yeah. Well, I just got you tuned in a little bit ago.
Okay. I appreciate
you talking there. Okay.
All right, Bill. Thanks, buddy.
All right.
Have a good morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. Here is Elizabeth on WGN. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Hi.
As I said, I've got that lady that saw Sammy Davis Jr. beat because I saw Nat King Cole on my prom night.
Oh,
and he was fantastic. He came out, he did his act, and then he looked around the audience. He said, there's a lot of kids here from proms tonight. He stayed out over an hour doing requests.
Oh, man. That's amazing. And that was at the Chez Paris.
At the Chez Paris, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Nat King Cole taking requests on your prom night. Now, see, that's a memorable prom. Yeah. All right, Elizabeth, thanks.
Yeah, I'm 79 now, and I still remember that very clearly.
Of course, I bet. I bet you do. Okay, Elizabeth, thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks, bye.
She saw Nat King Cole taking requests at the Chez Paris on her prom. I ended up in a motel room with 6 other idiots, and then went to Great America the next day. It was fantastic. My friends were all thrilled because my 22-year-old girlfriend at the time was able to buy booze. So now, so was, oh man. Here's Raheem on WGN. Hi, Raheem.
Hi, I just wanted to call in and I guess I sent a text in talking about Whiskey Row.
Yeah.
But Whiskey Row was located across from the old stockyards.
Okay.
And that area between Persian Road and around 41st and Ashland, now, that was a row of taverns.
Mm-hmm.
It was a neighborhood where houses lived. So I had an opportunity to know Stanley's, which is on 41st and Ashland, which was Whiskey Row. I had opportunity to know Wanda. And a lot of people may call it Wanda's because Wanda was a little girl that grew up from there, and she's in her 90s.
Oh, wow.
And, she and I became very good friends. I have a very – and she was known as the Madam – of Whiskey Road.
Wow, that's great. And she's Raheem, she's still with us?
Yes, she's still with us.
That's amazing.
And you want to hear a beautiful story of me when I was too young to go into the London House.
Mm-hmm.
And out in the vestibule of the London House, they would have cheese laid out there, big rolls of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go in, I would put on a suit coat because I was too young to go in there. But I would, I love jazz so much. I would go in there and sit in the vestibule there, eat a cheese. And the guys in the band started coming out seeing me, knew I loved that jazz, and they... One day, one of them snuck me in. Ramsey Lewis was playing there at the old London House.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
That is a great story, man. That's a very cool. That's a very, very cool memory. So, thanks for the call, Raheem.
Thank you.
All right, buddy. Take care. What a great story. Ramsey Lewis sneaking the kid in to see Ramsey Lewis after he eats a bunch of cheese. There's nothing wrong with that. Dino says, Wally's Red Hot's at Diversity and Central. Oh, you know, Dan, as you know, I lived near Grand and Central for a bunch of years. That was one of our go-tos. Did you ever go to Wally's Red Hot's?
No, I did not.
Great hot dog joint. Diversity and Central. Say the best double cheeseburger. I don't think if I've ever had it. I used to always get hot. Whenever I went to Wally's, it was always hot dogs. And they were very, like Gene and Jude's. If you ask for ketchup, they'll punch you in the face. That's the way. Wally's was very, even more adamant than Gene and Jude's. Gene and Jude's at least has ketchup on the premises. They won't put it on the hot dog. You'll have to put it on yourself if you're going to ruin your hot dog, but it's for the fries. But I don't think Wally's, I don't think they had ketchup in the building in that place. 847. Yeah, man, it didn't take long for somebody to mention the whale. Yeah, man. Thirsty whale, man. We've talked about the Thirsty Whale, man, 8 million times on this show over the years. So many great stories. We've had people who ran the whale on the show. Oh, man, bands who've played there. Thirsty Whale. Speaking of, I just spoke of Gene and Jude's. And it was right down the street from Gene and Jude's in River Grove. I think it's a gas station now, they say. I think it is. That place, though, man, legendary, the whale. 773 area code says, the Dill Pickle Deli on Russian Ontario. Yeah, you entered from the alley. And then Jerry's Deli at Grand and St. Clair. Used to go there all the time. Jerry's Deli, all the time. I used to work on, what was the name of that street? Maybe Industry? And it was right near there. I can't remember the name of the damn street, but it was right. It's right near Grand and St. Clair. And that was the first office we did Roy's Magazine out of. And we used to always go to Jerry's Deli all the time. Bob says, how about Sam's Hot Dogs in Willow Spring on Archer Avenue and Willow Springs Road? It was a great little hot dog stand. And, of course, 847 area code says, how about Olson Rug on Diversity and Pulaski? The Waterfall and Indian Teepee. Yeah. Waterfall and Indian Teepee. 773, Ed DeBevick's. It's so weird. You know, Dan, we pass where Ed DeBevick's used to be every morning on the way home. And I still can't get over the fact that there's now like a giant condo there. You know, it's just so weird, you know, because I mean, I had, you know, in the 80s, I had a lot of friends who worked at Ed DeBevick's because I was, you know, friends with actors and stuff. And of course, they're going to work at Ed DeBevick's. And I used to hang out there all the time. I used to hang out at Ed DeBevick's all the time. Late 80s into the early 90s, I was there all the time. I knew like 12 people that worked at the at DeBevick's. 847 area code says, you know, and then right across the street from Ed DeBevick's used to be Planet Hollywood. One of my ex-girlfriends was a waitress at Planet Hollywood. And then that was a Geno's East. Now it's another, it's condos, right?
I think it is now, yeah.
Yeah, it's because there's like a, and there's like a veggie restaurant opening up in the storefront right there.
Makes sense.
And then, but that was Planet Hollywood. Ridiculous. 847 says there's a Flukies in Niles on Golf in Milwaukee. That's still there. That Flukies is still there. Terry says, does anybody remember Capizzi's Pizza, North Avenue near Austin? I do not. And I should, because I know that area. So, all right. Cool. We got more to talk about here, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200, businesses that you miss that were in Chicago. 312-981-7200. That's my main man, Jerry Lewis, rocking away right there. Requested by Donald, it's rocking by Baby, by the one, the only Jerry Lewis on Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wendy! Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. We're talking about retail businesses and other places that have been closed that we miss. And a bunch of texts have come in. John says, there was a place called Mel Martin's. We had a few pops and sat on the beach. All of a sudden, we heard a lion roar. We didn't realize it was across the street from the Lincoln Park Zoo. Uh, 312 area code. DB Kaplan's Deli is a place that they miss. 708 area code. Manzo's, Biasetti's, PJ's, Cass and Lou's. Also on Randolph by the Oriental Theater, there's a really cool country bar called The Ranch. Joel Daly from Channel 7 and his band The Sundowners would sing down there. All you had to do was go right around the corner. 309 area code says, I loved Rose Records in the Loop. Used to go there all the time. Used to go there a lot when I was in college. As I had eclectic taste, they had everything. I was there after they sold to a chain when I was talking to the salesman, saying how they used to have a better selection. He disputed that, but I was rattled. I rattled off a dozen titles and genres of albums that were gone. And then he agreed. Mary from Roselle said, my BFF had her first job at Woolworth's at Six Corners. I missed the Wags at Six Corners. Best coffee ever. We used to go to the Wags at Six Corners all the time. It was on Milwaukee, and it was just northwest of the Portage Theater. So we went to Wags. We were at Wags constantly. That was, you know, whenever we saw a movie at the Portage, all my friends and I, we would go directly to Wags. Ate there a lot. So, a bunch of people on the line here. Let's get to Dan in Lake Geneva on WGN. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I've got a couple of them for you.
All right.
In the 60s, there was a place called the Athens on Rush, which was one of the most fabulous nightclubs in Chicago. Mm-hmm. They had a two-hour show of Greek music and dancing and partying. And that was one of those places a lot of times where they would lock the doors at 2 o'clock and continue on until about 5 a.m.
Yeah.
So it was great. And then we just lost the Parthenon, and Roditi's over in Greektown.
Yeah,
for crying out
loud. I know. That's unbelievable to me. When I heard that was going away, I couldn't believe it. I was like, I mean, that's a tradition. That place is iconic.
Well, absolutely. And the thing of it is all of that stuff is being replaced by tall buildings. But the one that nobody has brought up that I had the privilege of working at as a room manager and then the assistant GM was the Chicago Playboy Club.
Oh, people. Sure. Yeah, the Chicago Playboy Club, yeah.
That place was so much fun, I'm telling you. It was a pleasure to work there.
Yeah, I bet. And at that time, you know, a mecca for good music, too, because and comedians. Like, a lot of stand-up comedians got their starts there, a lot of legendary stand-ups.
Anybody and everybody that you ever saw on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yeah.
I met, and of course, that was their boss when they were up on the stage upstairs in the cabaret showroom. So yeah. It was nice to be somebody's boss for a night.
Let me ask you a question, Dan. Have you seen the movie Green Book?
I haven't seen it yet. I've been away and running around all over the dugout country.
If you get a chance, first of all, it's a really terrific movie. But second of all, Viggo Mortensen's character is a guy that works the floor in a famous nightclub in New York. And it's, I'm sure these stories, I'm sure that the stories that they have in that movie, you're going to be able to identify with. I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. That's a dugout, sure.
All right. All right, Dan. Thanks, man.
Thanks. We'll see you.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. Oh, your dad's on the line, huh?
My dad is on the line.
All right. It's Mr. Shagrew. Hey, Ray, how you doing?
Good, Dick. How about yourself this evening?
I'm good. What were you calling in about?
Well, you know, you mentioned the Zephyr, but how about Buffalo ice cream at Irving and Pulaski?
Yeah, I live spitting distance from where that place used to be. That's exactly where I remember that place was. We used to go there for like special occasions. That would be like, oh, we're going to get some special ice cream. That place was great.
Well, yeah, my grandfather brought me there when I was a kid. I can remember.
Yeah.
The other one on ice cream was Lockwood Castle.
Lockwood Castle. Devon and Central?
Yep.
Devon and Central. It's now a Starbucks. Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah. How that has changed. But as I was thinking, one you have to know about is Riverview Amusement Park right there at Belmont and Western.
Yeah, I don't remember it. My parents told me that I was there when my mom was pregnant with me, so I did go there at one point. But yeah, I mean, I do, and I know the stories. My parents used to go to Riverview all the time, and I've heard so many stories about Riverview, and it's hard to believe that when you look at that area now, where it, like DeVry is there, and you got a Jewel, you got a not a Dominic's anymore, but you got a Jewel, and I think it's a Mariano's is there now, and there's a mall with a Toys R Us, like a strip mall with a Toys R Us there. I can't even imagine there being a giant amusement park right there, smack dab in the middle of the city.
It was fantastic, but if your mother was pregnant, you probably went through the tunnel of love with your dad.
Yeah,
they were there.
That's probably probably did. Yeah, I think she actually, you know, didn't know it was unsafe to ride roller coasters while she was pregnant, and I turned out. That's why I turned out this way. I'm pretty sure.
Well, the other one is Kiddyland up on North Avenue.
Right by the track. That's why I know about it. It was. But yeah, that was a place. You know, my parents did this for me on my birthday. I don't remember how old I was. I was probably 7 or 8 or something. They used to have a deal at that Kiddyland where they would pick you up in a fire truck. You and your friends at the birthday party pick you up in a fire truck and drive the fire truck directly to Kiddyland from your house. So you get to ride on a fire truck, a real fire truck. And my parents did that for me on one of my birthdays, and it was, I mean, I was like the star, man, because like all my friends were like, oh man, because we were on a fire truck and they got to blow the end, you know, the siren and everything, and we took us directly to Kiddyland. We had a big day at Kiddyland, and the fire truck took us all home.
Yeah. Well, the last one, Kingston Mind Theater by DePaul.
Mm-hmm.
I actually saw Grease. At Kingston Mind Theater, because Greets was written by a guy from high school by us. Kingston Mind Theater on Lincoln Avenue down there.
I remember that, too. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Hey, Ray, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
Thanks, Dad. See you in a couple hours.
See you in a couple hours, right? Okay.
Good night.
All right, there you go. That was nice of your dad to call in.
Yeah.
Share some memories. Very cool. All right, everybody hang on. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We're remembering places that don't exist anymore in Chicago. And the book we were talking about earlier that started this whole conversation is Lost Restaurants of Chicago. And it's available now. All right, we'll break. The news is after this. Yeah. It's Wild Card Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to Wild Card Wednesday. Yippee, Wild Card Wednesday. And that's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 773 area code requesting Sing Along with Mitch. Has anybody seen my gal? All right. Welcome back, everybody. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. The Oscar nominations were announced, and I will go through those. We'll talk about the snubs and the surprises, and I'll give you my thoughts on it as well. And we'd love to hear what you think of the nominations. But right now, we're going to talk a little bit more about gone but not forgotten businesses and retail shops and bars and clubs and stuff in the Chicago area that no longer exist. reminiscing a little bit. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to jump in. Let's see. Here is Cindy on WGN. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Back in the 50s, I used to work at Continental Bank downtown at Jackson LaSalle. I don't know if it's still there, but anyway, we used to go for a meal to the South Loop to the Epicurean. It was owned by a man named Andy Soren, and our favorite dish, was shrimp Dijon. It was shrimp in butter with crumbs on top. It was just delicious. And then I lived around the corner in Logan Square from the original Father and Son Pizza on the corner of Whipple and Diversey. Although we were Polish, so I don't know if my parents ever bought pizza.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. No, the original Father and Son, that's a classic. Classic place.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Cindy. Thank you.
Have a good one, sir. Okay, bye.
Bye. 312-981-7200. Here's Dolores on WGN. Hi, Dolores.
Hi. I wonder, you haven't mentioned Math Eigler's restaurant with the singing waiters at Lincoln and Belmont.
Whoa. That might be... Man.
Do you remember that?
I don't.
It's right behind a big art supply store right now, but the location was just a block north of Belmont off of Lincoln Avenue. You went like 100 feet west.
That's my neighborhood. I mean, that's where I grew up.
Yeah,
that's where
I
grew up. Wow.
You've been talking about it, but Math Eigler's, and they had the singing waiters. It was a great place for an evening of entertainment and singing. They'd ask you to sing along. And also, have you said anything about Zum Deutschen Eck?
Oh, no, we didn't. I have not mentioned Zum Deutschen Eck,
And that one is completely gone, but that was a real staple in that neighborhood.
That's absolutely right. Zum Deutschen Eck. Yeah, that was a great. That was great. Okay, thanks, Dolores.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bringing up some stuff from my old neighborhood. Speaking of my old neighborhood, Dan, the Tiny Lounge. You remember Tiny Lounge?
Sure. I think versions of it still there.
Yeah, well, it's on Lincoln now. Tiny Lounge is on Lincoln, right by Wells Park now. It's right a little bit east of Wells Park. Southeast of Wells Park. But it used to be located right across the street from where I grew up. What they did was the Addison Brown line stop, the one that I lived next to for 18 years, was a pretty big stop. And then they basically like sort of knocked it down and tightened it up and closed it down a little bit. But the bar right next to it, I mean, like right there, was called Tiny Lounge. You ever wonder why a bar that's so tiny is named Tiny Lounge? That's not so tiny is named Tiny Lounge? It's because the bar in its original location next to former Addison Brown Line station was really small, like a handful of circle booths, midnight blue leather, gorgeous vintage wood bar that sat maybe 10, and a weird back room with couple seats where people made out. The dark, charming drinking den closed in 2006 after the CTA bought the land for the new Addison Brown Line station. The Tiny Lounge still exists. It's up on Lincoln. But that was right. But you know what that place was called when I was growing up? It was a bar. And it was a bar, and it was called Giannini's. And I can't remember the guy. Somebody was Lou, maybe? Lou Giannini? Big bald guy. Big kind of, kind of a fat, big, jolly, bald guy. And his last name was Giannini's. And that's what, or Giannini, and that's what the bar was. That was the bar that was in that space, while I was growing up. And then on the other side, so on one side of the Brown Line stop on Addison, on the east side of the tracks was Tiny Lounge, or I'm sorry, Giannini's when I was growing up. And on the other side, the west side of the tracks was the Cork Lounge, which is still there. The Cork Lounge is still right there. And the Cork Lounge is directly across from where I lived. Giannini's. My parents used to go to Giannini's, and I would go in there, and they made cheeseburgers and stuff. They had food at Giannini's, and they had really great cheeseburgers. And I remember growing up, I would sit at the bar and eat a cheeseburger while my parents had a little cocktail or two. And he was a great guy. He was a really nice guy. Sometimes I'd go, my parents would call and order a couple of cheeseburgers, and then I'd run across the street and pick him up, and he was always really cool to me. And they used to have those. I don't know if any bars have these anymore. I mean, I haven't stepped into a bar, you know, in over 3 years. But I wonder if they still had the. Do you remember when they would have like heated peanuts? And you'd put a quarter in, and you'd get like a paper cup. And then it was like a vending machine that had hot peanuts in it. And you would put some money in, and then the peanuts would come out of the bottom, and it would go into your paper cup, and you'd have your paper cup full of hot peanuts. I used to love that when I was a kid. I loved that. I loved the fact that they had the heated peanuts with the paper cup. That's like one of the strongest memories I have of Tiny Lounge, or not Tiny Lounge, God, Giannini's. Also, wait, now here's another thing Giannini's did. They would play every because, you know, obviously we were, you know, like seven, eight, nine blocks away from Wrigley Field, seven blocks away from Wrigley Field at that point. And so people had to drive down Addison to get to, because, you know, the traffic was insane. And I would sit outside and people from out of town would go, how far is Wrigley? And I'd just keep going straight ahead. And it was all, you know, the traffic would be backed up. And every home game, every, you know, like home game that they played, and this is before light, so they were all day games. Every home game they played, Giannini's had an outdoor speaker, and they would blast, hey, hey, holy mackerel, no doubt about it, the Cubs are over and over and over. And they did it for the people who were in the cars as they drove by. But everybody who lived in the neighborhood or hung out in the neighborhood was like, oh, my God. You had to hear it. The Cubs are on their way. Hey, hey, holy mackerel. You had to hear that like 800 times before the game. He'd run it about an hour and a half before the game. So for an hour and a half straight before the game, that would play over and over and over again on a loudspeaker right outside of Giannini's. right there next to the Brown Line stop. So you got cars honking, traffic everywhere. You got L trains going by, and you got that song playing over and over and over again. That's... very specific. So, all right, we got some more stores and businesses that we want to talk about here. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. We mentioned Marshall Fields. We mentioned Woolworths. How about Wix? Wix Furniture. It was a warehouse, the Wix Furniture Warehouse. You know, you used to do the commercials for Wix. Locally, Dan?
Who's that?
Shelley Long. Eagle Food Center. Remember Eagle? Eagle Foods. Of course, Blockbuster. But those were not specific to Chicago. Dominick's. Those are gone. And then, of course, Walden Books. But, you know, bookstores are hard to come by now anyway, which is too bad. So, all right, we got some other places that we want to talk about. Gone but not forgotten. 312-981-7200. But first, let's break for some weather here. Mike requested this. Not Dr. Demento didn't perform this. He played it all the time. It was Napoleon something.
Was 14th.
Napoleon the 14th. They're coming to take me away. Ha ha ho he 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 ha ha. That was a staple on Dr. Demento's show. It was always on the Funny Five. So... Wild Card Wednesday continues. Yeah. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Coming up at 5 o'clock is Steve Grzanich in the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All righty then. We are talking about gone but not forgotten businesses and places that we used to love that aren't around anymore here in Chicago. Bring back a lot of memories from our childhood or when we were younger. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
All right.
Hey, that's another thing that's gone but not forgotten. King Dr. Demento, along with the King Biscuit Flower Hour.
Yeah, man. King Biscuit Flower Hour. Yeah, man. King Biscuit Flower Hour. Yeah, that was legendary. I used to listen. I'm telling you, man. Every Sunday night I listened to Dr. Demento when I was young, man. Every Sunday night. I loved Dr. Demento. He's the best.
I tell you what, before I get on what I was going to say, Sunday nights was a difficult night because you had King Biscuit Flower Hour.
Yeah.
You had Dr. Demento, but then you had the two Ronnies and Dave Allen at large.
On TV. Yeah. Well, you know, it was funny because, like, I, you know, Dr. Demento was something that I listened to I mean, pretty much constantly when I was a teenager. And then I ended up as his competition for a bunch of years. When I used to do the weekends, my Sunday night show was direct competition with Dr. Demento, which I always thought was kind of weird.
But I have a Robin Trower CD I bought at a gas station.
Yeah.
It was just on the counter. That was a King Biscuit Flower Hour concert from 1977.
Oh, that's prime Robin Trower right there that year, that 77. Yeah.
But remember Adventureland?
Sure.
I mean, that's gone. I mean, that was, you know, like the hometown amusement parks, you know, it was nice. You'd have to go all the way up to Gurnee or Bolingbrook.
Right.
You know, you had Adventureland, Playland, you know.
Kittyland, as we mentioned earlier, yep.
Yeah. Yep. But the restaurant I wanted to mention was the Ground Round.
Classic. Yeah.
Yeah. There was one on the south side at 79th and Cicero. I think it was 87th and Cicero. 87th and Cicero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a few Ground Round locations. And that's when you could throw peanut shells on the floor at the Ground Round. That was like the fun part for kids. Like, oh, there's peanut shells all over the floor. We don't have to be clean. We can just throw peanut shells on the floor.
Yeah, every time you took a step, you crackled.
Exactly. That's exactly right. All right, Mike, thanks for the call, man.
All right, Nick, you take it easy.
There you go. Mentioning Robin Trower, man. Oh, man. Here's Sue on WGN. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
I wanted to mention I grew up in River Forest, and anyway, when I was a little kid, the family sometimes would go to Horwath's on North Avenue, and it wasn't until years later, I found out that a lot of the River Forest mafioso went there, Giancana and stuff. And I just wanted to say that a couple of times later, obviously growing up, there were some mysterious fires that happened there. And I'll just say that there was this one tree that always survived, and they kind of had the building built around it.
Oh, is that right?
Interesting history.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Jeez.
Have a good one.
Thank you. Take care. There you go. Thank you, Sue. Well, if I don't know if people remember this, but having been in the theater community from basically in the theater community from the late 80s on, I remember Scenes and Act One bookstores. There were two of them. More than just a place you went to find play scripts that Barnes and Nobles didn't carry. The theater bookshop was a community center for the industry and anyone trying to break into it. It was a place to find out about auditions and other opportunities, talk shop, and make connections. Scenes, a coffee shop and a bookseller just south of Belmont on Clark, and Act One, a below-ground bookshop on Lincoln Avenue, what's now the Apollo Theater Studio, were prime examples. Yeah, you would go there to see, because they would post auditions on the wall of both of these theaters, and it became like, all right, let's go to Scenes and drink some coffee and talk theater. That's what you did. So, tons of texts coming in really quickly here. Jennifer says Frankenstein's in Indiana. I love that place. There's a picture of me somewhere that my parents have of me standing underneath the big Frankenstein monster, who's holding a hot dog and he's got a big mug of root beer. Frankenstein. See, he's got a stein of root beer. 77 there, 3 area code says Ronnie's Steak Palace was the place to go for breakfast with a $2.50 steak and egg deal and a big toast. There's still a Ronnie's Steak Palace downtown at Clark and Lake, the Clark and Lake building right there. 312 area code says Parsi's Hot Dogs on Higgins at Harlem, also Windy City on Irving Park. Earlier on Lincoln Avenue, near Lincoln Avenue, Irving and Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
630 area code says, I miss the shops Uncle Fun and Goodies. Uncle Fun was awesome. That place was awesome. That was a great place. Goodies, too. I also miss the club Tuts, which later became the Avalon. That's at Belmont and Sheffield. The Avalon was a music club that was on the second floor. You had to climb up a big flight of stairs to get there. I saw so many bands there, and I had a lot of friends who played in bands that played at the Avalon. It's now, if at the last I saw, it's a hair salon place. And I missed good old Flipside Records. Yes, Flipside Records. That's where I ditched. That's the place where I bought the Final Cut by Pink Floyd, because I ditched school that day when the album came out. 7300 says, I worked at a place on Narragansett near Belmont in the late 70s called Cobart's Comedy Cove. It was a neighborhood bar and comedy club. I saw Judy Tenuta, Larry Reeb, and a few others before they became famous. Dan, Super Cup on Higgins and Nagel.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I totally forgot about that place. Wow, yeah. Pat says, the Swedish Bakery. That's a damn shame. I got to say, that's a shame that that place closed down. Andersonville staple. Heather and I got our wedding cake from there, and you had a piece of that cake, and it was good.
It was.
It was a damn good cake. Biasetti's on Irving and Ashland. Reggio's on Milwaukee and Oakton. 815 area code, the Millionaires Club. There were a few locations. You paid for you paid for dinner and all your drinks were included. My parents went there a lot. So did my parents. And you got, Dan, the Millionaires Club, you got a membership card to be part of the Millionaires Club. That was a 70s thing, man. We would go, my parents would have, and drinks were included. You'd pay for dinner, your drinks were included. And so people went there and got soused. And it was located right, though, at least the one that my parents went to was located right across the street from the Mill Run Theater, like in the Golf Mill area. They had a Mill Run, it was a live venue, Mill Run Theater. And I remember we went to the Millionaires Club a bunch of times. That was a big thing, my parents, like in the mid-70s. Let's go to the Millionaires Club. And we always had kitty cocktails, which is great, too, because you always want to, I had those along with my candy cigarettes, so I could pretend that I was, that I was smoking and getting drunk.
While you hang out at a bar.
Exactly. Oh, man. I had my first drink ever. They gave me a tequila sunrise at 17 before leaving for college. Wow. 779 area code, Ponderosa. Well, yeah, Ponderosa Sizzler. Going to Sizzler. One of the greatest moments in film history, by the way. Kadeem Hardinson. Going to Sizzler. And White Men Can't Jump. It's one of them. we played it on the air. Somebody bothered to had the time to take that and loop that for like 7 minutes of just him going to Sizzler. One of the greatest moments in film history. Mike says, what about Shanghai Lil's? Shanghai Lil's, that's also, Dan, do you remember Shanghai Lil's?
I do not.
A little bit further west up on Milwaukee, in that same sort of area that we're talking about. Great. Shanghai Lil's was a great, great restaurant. And how about Tasty Hasty? Do you remember Tasty Hasty?
I never ate there. I do remember the name, though.
Tasty Hasty was like it was a drive-in hot dog joint. It had the speakers and everything. You would go out there and Tasty Hasty. We used to go to Tasty Hasty a lot when I was a kid. And they used to have a big box of little trinkets and toys that kids could just take from. It was on the counter when you walked in to order your food. Yeah, Tasty Hasty. And then Sharon says Villa Venise, where you could take a boat ride out of the restaurant. All right. Lots of memories. Every time we talk about this kind of stuff, people just, their heads just fill with great memories. So, okay. We are going to take a break. The news is coming up next. And then after the news, the Academy Award nominations were announced yesterday. I will tell you who was nominated. We'll talk about the snubs. We'll talk about the surprises. I'll tell you what I think. And we'll hear from you at 312-981-7200. News is coming up next. Peter and Decatur always... looking to support what's happening on the show. Peter and Decatur on Wildcard Wednesday has requested that's Doris Day, Hooray for Hollywood, in honor of the Oscar nominations, which is what we're going to be talking about. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. It is we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. So the Oscar nominations were, they were announced. There were a few surprises and a couple of snubs, and we'll get to that. I did pretty good on my predictions. I did okay. Like I said, there were a couple of surprises and a couple of snubs that I missed. But for the most part, I did pretty good. So here are your nominations for the Academy Awards. For Best Picture, A Star is Born, Roma, Green Book, The Favorite, Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, and Vice. Those were all expected to be in there. And yeah, so but the last two that I mentioned, Bohemian Rhapsody and Vice, are both terrible movies, and I mean, like, really terrible movies, especially Bohemian Rhapsody. So for Best Actor, Christian Bale for Vice, Bradley Cooper for A Star Is Born, Rami Malek for Bohemian Rhapsody, Viggo Mortensen for Green Book, and here was a surprise. This was a surprise. Willem Dafoe for At Eternity's Gate. He plays Van Gogh in that movie, and he's really good in it. I didn't expect him to get nominated. He got nominated for a Golden Globe for it, but people thought that was because, you know, they split it up between comedy and, you know, comedy and drama. And yeah, now the surprise there is as far as I think most people think, is Ethan Hawke not getting nominated for First Reformed, and we'll get to that in a little bit when we talk about the snubs. But that was a real surprise. I was really surprised by that. Best Actress, Yalitza Aparicio for Roma, Glenn Close for The Wife, Olivia Colman for The Favorite, Lady Gaga for A Star Is Born, and Melissa McCarthy for Can You Ever Forgive Me. Not many surprises here in this category. So, and this is a tough one, you know, because, you know, a lot of people really love Lady Gaga and loved her in the movie, and she was very, very good in the movie. So there's a lot of buzz behind her and a lot of hope that she gets it. Glenn Close, Dan, I don't think Glenn Close has ever won an Academy Award. She's been nominated several times, but I don't think she's ever won an Academy Award. So she would be like the emotional favorite. Like, people would be put behind her because it's like, you know, she's been in the business for such a long time and has given so many great performances, and she's terrific in The Wife. And so so I don't think she's ever won.
She has not. Seven times nominated,
not one win. So that could be the way to go. If you're going to go with a veteran, you know, Melissa McCarthy, people love her in that movie. She, you know, but she's still got a lot of career left in her. So I think it's between Lady Gaga, because that's of the moment, and Glenn Close. Supporting actor, Mahershala Ali for Green Book, Sam Elliott for A Star Is Born, Adam Driver for Black Klansman, Richard E. Grant, Can You Ever Forgive Me, and Sam Rockwell for Vice, which was a surprise. I did not expect Sam Rockwell to get nominated. He's the best thing in Vice. Without question, he's the best thing in that movie. Plays George W. Bush, and he is really entertaining in it, and by far the best thing in the movie. But yeah. So that was a surprise. Supporting actress Amy Adams for Vice. Hey, here's a real pleasant surprise. Marina de Tavaria for Roma. I didn't expect that at all, and it's a great surprise because she's great in the movie. Regina King in If Beale Street Could Talk. Emma Stone for The Favorite. Rachel Weisz for The Favorite. And again, like I said yesterday, just give it to Regina King. Regina King. She's going to win it. She's definitely going to win it. Okay. Best Director. This is the one that has the biggest shocking surprise of any category. Alfonso Cuarón for Roma, Spike Lee for Black Klansman, Paul Pawlikowski for Cold War. What? Yorgos Lanthimos for The Favorite, and Adam McKay for Vice. So that was a big surprise. Nobody expected him to get that nomination. You know, and the real big surprise here, and a lot of people think it's not, Bradley Cooper didn't get nominated for Best Director, and they gave it to the guy from Cold War instead. Cold War is a terrific movie, by the way. I just watched it. And here's something. I knew this, but I guess maybe I just put it out of my mind. This is Spike Lee's first nomination as a director. How is that possible? He's been making movies for 34 years. This is his first nomination as a director for Black Klansman. That's amazing. I just assumed. I mean, he didn't get nominated for, you know, you would think, like, especially Malcolm X. You think he would get nominated for Malcolm X, some of the other big movies that he's made. I mean, Do the Right Thing. I think he got nominated for screenplay for Do the Right Thing. But yeah. So, adapted screenplay. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Joel and Ethan Coen snuck in some categories here, man. This Ballad of Buster Scruggs, popped out pretty bit. It popped into a few categories that nobody really expected. I didn't expect it to get nominated for adapted screenplay, but it did. And it got nominated for song, too. Black Klansman is up for adapted screenplay. Can You Ever Forgive Me? If Beale Street Could Talk, and A Star Is Born. And then for original screenplay, The Favorite, First Reformed, Green Book, Roma, and Vice. Animated film. Incredibles 2, Isle of Dogs, Mirai, Ralph Breaks the Internet, and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And again, man, if you were to tell me, you know, like 2 months before that Spider-Man animated movie opened, that it would be Oscar nominated, I would be like, are you kidding me? Original song. Again, When a Cowboy Trades His Spurs for Wings from the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Another genuine surprise. Coen Brothers sneaking in there. All the Stars from Black Panther, I'll Fight from RBG. The Place where Lost Things Go from Mary Poppins Returns, and Shallow from A Star Is Born. And that's another one where you can just give it to, Lady Gaga, Mark Ronson, and crew. Original score, Black Panther, Black Klansman. I was happy to see that because Terrence Blanchard, who's been doing Spike Lee's scores for many, many, many years, wrote a beautiful score for Black Klansman, and he has written some very memorable scores over the past years, and I was happy about that. Nicholas Britell for If Beale Street Could Talk, Andre Desplat for Isle of Dogs, Mark Shaiman for Mary Poppins Returns. The one snub here in original score is First Man. For foreign language film, Never Look Away from Germany, Shoplifters from Japan, Capernaum from Lebanon, Roma from Mexico, and Cold War from Poland. Let's see a few more here. A lot of these things picked up like for sound editing, and sound mixing. It's amazing to me that sound editing, you know, it got a nomination for A Quiet Place, but it didn't get nominated for sound mixing. I don't understand. The whole movie was about sound. For visual effects, Avengers: Infinity War, Christopher Robin. That was a surprise. Nobody expected Christopher Robin to be nominated for visual effects. First Man, Ready Player One. For cinematography, Cold War, The Favorite, Never Look Away, Roma, and A Star Is Born. So here's an interesting one. For Never Look Away, Caleb Deschanel got nominated. That is Zoe's dad. And what's her, Bones, her sister? That's their dad. I can't remember her name. She's in Bones.
Emily?
No, I don't think so. Deschanel?
Emily Deschanel.
Is it? Okay, Emily Deschanel. That's their dad. He's been a cinematographer forever, and he's finally getting recognition, which I think is cool. So, and for costume design, again, the Ballad of Buster Scruggs gets in there, man. Black Panther, The Favorite, Mary Poppins Returns, and Mary Queen of Scots. So there it goes. Roma and The Favorite tied for most nominations with 10. And I think that, you know, I mean, you know, these are many of these categories were expected to go this way. There were a few snubs. There were a few surprises and a couple of really cool things. So, you know, it went well. And in between Kumail and Tracy, who did the announcing, every bit of banter, Dan, every bit of banter was about how little sleep they got and how early they had to get up. I'm not kidding. Like, between every announcement, every joke was about not getting sleep. My alarm was set at 2:30, and then I didn't sleep. And they're both charming people who I like very much. But come on, man, make some different jokes. Every single joke was about, what am I doing up? It's really early. You can touch on that, obviously. You're not going to not touch on it when you're up 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, in Hollywood. But get a little variation on your material. So, all right. Well, there you go. Those are the nominations. If you guys have thoughts, who are you rooting for? What movies do you like? Were you surprised by any of it? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We will talk about the snubs and surprises as well. I used to watch this all the time when I was a kid. The New Zoo Review is coming after you. That's a kind of a scary thought. But, hey, it's Wild Card Wednesday. You've been Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 773 area code. Requesting the New Zoo Review theme song. We tend to get a good amount of TV theme songs on our on our Wednesday mornings here with the Wild Card Wednesday. So there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. I got the Oscar nominations. We just told you in a bunch of categories, the major ones. There were some surprises. There were some snubs. I'm going to go through those right now. And I would love to hear from you guys. What do you think? Who are you rooting for? Were there any surprises that you thought of? And would you like to, we'd like to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Before we get back to, before we do the snubs and surprises, let's hear about the Oscar nominees reacting. Here are the Oscar nomination, or the nominees reacting. The following are some reactions through statements, telephone calls, and social media to the Oscar nominations announced Tuesday by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Glenn Close, who was nominated for Best Actress for The Wife. She says, "Everything to do with this movie has been a total joy. Bjorn Runge is a great director. Jonathan Pryce is an inspired partner. I am so proud that a little film that has such great resonance with so many people." That's Glenn Close, who I think she's maybe the odds-on favorite to win. Bradley Cooper, Best Actor nominee for A Star Is Born. He says, "Everyone who worked on this film risked putting themselves out there in the hope that doing so, people will connect and feel something deep and personal, the way films have made me feel since I was a kid. When I got this opportunity, I knew I had to risk it all because I may never get another chance. So to be here today in a place where people have seen this film and are talking about it, how it makes them feel, may it feel something deep, that simple human thing, that we need each other and the Academy to recognize that this morning, I'm just so grateful." Yeah, Yalitza Aparicio, Best Actress nominee for Roma. "For the very first casting call to this movie, my Roma journey has been extraordinary. As a daughter of a domestic worker and an indigenous woman myself, I am proud this movie will help those of us who feel invisible be seen. I am humbled and honored. Thank you." Oh, beautiful. Best movie of the year, folks, Roma. Absolutely. And it's an incredible piece of work. Alfonso Cuarón, Best Director nominee for Roma, says, "Thank you to the Academy for recognizing Roma across these categories. Human experience is one and the same, and it's so gratifying that a black and white film about life in Mexico is being celebrated around the world. We are living in a great moment in cinema where diversity is embraced by audiences." Willem Dafoe, Best Actor nominee for At Eternity's Gate. He says, "I am over the moon with this nomination. Playing Vincent van Gogh and Julian Schnabel's At Eternity's Gate was a gift. The making was so transforming, and my working with Julian was so complete and close that sometimes it felt like we were the same person. I share this honor with him." Amy Adams, reacting to her Best Supporting Actress nominee for nomination for Vice. "Thank you so much to the Academy for this recognition. It is an honor to be nominated for a film that I loved making. I am so grateful to Adam McKay for writing such rich material and creating such a wonderful work environment." Emma Stone, nominated for Best Supporting Actress for The Favorite, says, "Working on The Favorite alongside with my brilliant friends Olivia Colman and Rachel Weisz and the whole cast was nothing short of incredible. I am grateful every day and I am honored by this nomination." Yorgos Lanthimos, Best Director nominee for The Favorite, said, "I would like to thank the Academy for honoring The Favorite so generously today. Having felt a bit like an outsider looking in, I am truly humbled by this morning's announcements." Nominations. Got 10 nominations. 10 nominations. Richard E. Grant, Best Supporting Actor nominee for Can You Ever Forgive Me? You know, I got to tell you, it really is. I love Richard E. Grant. I love him. He's been around for years and years and years and years. And for him to finally get a bunch of recognition, to finally get the recognition that he deserves, you know, and I think this is his first nomination. He's never been nominated and he's given performances. And here's my go-to. If you're not familiar with Richard E. Grant's work, you'd know him. If you don't know him by name, as soon as you see the guy, you're like, oh, that British guy who's been in 9,000 movies and who's good in 9,000 movies. The go-to, if you want to see the quintessential Richard E. Grant performance, a movie called With Nail and I. Unbelievable movie and an incredible performance. One of my favorite performances ever. Here's what Richard E. Grant says. For a boy growing up in Swaziland, the smallest country in the Southern Hemisphere, becoming an actor seemed an impossible dream, let alone being nominated for an Oscar. I'm literally levitating. Mahershala Ali's Best Supporting Actor nomination for Green Book. I'd like to thank the Academy for recognizing my work along with the extraordinary performances of my fellow nominees. Through Dr. Donald Shirley, I had the gift of navigating circumstances as a profound, gifted, complicated genius. The man who had experiences in combination of the qualities I had yet to see on film. And then Paul Lukowski, who surprised everybody, was surprised. I'm sure this guy was completely shocked by this. Best Director nominee for Cold War, which also got a Best Foreign Film nomination, which means that because they, you know, this is an interesting thing here, Dan, because you remember I was saying Roma's going to win Best Foreign Film and it's going to win Best Picture. I got a feeling it's going to, the love that Cold War got in the technical categories, directing categories and all that stuff, I think Cold War is going to get Foreign Film. I think Roma's going to get Picture. They're going to split it up. So... it's an incredible honor to be included amid this group of filmmakers, and I am so grateful to the Academy. Sharing this very personal film with the world over the last year has been an unforgettable journey. So that's what they thought. These were the people who were nominated. That's what they thought. They didn't get everybody's reaction, but a lot of these people seemed very thrilled. And, you know, why wouldn't they? And I'm especially happy for the two actresses who were nominated for Roma. Because they're just so good and so natural, and I'm happy for Alfonso Cuarón. He made a masterpiece. He made a personal, beautiful masterpiece. He shot it in black and white. It's in Spanish. I mean, you know, I want these things. You know, the odds are against something like that crossing over and becoming, you know, popular or getting all these kind of this kind of attention. But it's just that good a movie, and Alfonso Cuarón has obviously made big. You know, big budget movies in the past. He's worked in Hollywood for a long time. So, you know, a lot of freedom comes his way, you know, and an Oscar winner himself. So I love the fact that he went back home and made this really personal movie that he shot, that he edited, that he wrote, that's based upon memories of his childhood. And he made it in such a beautiful, beautiful way. It is just an extraordinary piece of work. And it's on Netflix. And you know the story now that AMC and Regal are refusing to screen it because of Netflix, and it's just so stupid. But independent theaters may show it. So my guess is that as we get closer to the Academy Awards, the Music Box is going to step up. that's what I'm seeing. The Music Box is going to do what they do and step up and get it on the big screen. So you know if you got Netflix and you want to watch it on Netflix. You know, it's still an extraordinary movie and is definitely worth seeing. And if you watch it on Netflix, please do watch it because it's like I said, it's a masterpiece. It's the best film of 2018. You watch it on Netflix, you'll be blown away by it. And then I know that once you see it on Netflix, if it does show up in an independent theater or the Music Box in town in 70mm or on the big screen, you'll go. That's just, you'll go. You'll involuntarily get up and leave and go. That's what's going to happen. So, okay, we got some snubs and some surprises to talk about among these nominations as well. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We'll go to the news right after this. My dad requested this, right? My dad. Traveling Wilburys, end of the line. My dad requested that for Wildcard Wednesday. Give me Wildcard Wednesday. There you go, Dad. I hope you're listening. Traveling Wilburys. My dad loves Traveling Wilburys. So, there you go. Welcome back, everybody. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're talking about the Oscar nominations. If you have any thoughts on that, who you're rooting for, any surprises, we would love to hear from you. Talk or text 312-981-7200. And we got a Blackhawks Express coming up, too. A good one. A really good one. An exciting, wonderful Blackhawks Express to play. And also covering the Oscars right here, right now, we've got some major nomination snubs and surprises. So let's go through those. And again, if you want to jump in on the Oscar nomination topic, it's 312-981-7200. Here's the one. Talked about this one already. We've got a couple of these already. Best Director surprises here. Bradley Cooper for A Star is Born. Peter Farrelly for Green Book. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die when it comes to predicting Best Director. Since its premiere, the assumption was that Cooper would be all over the Oscar nominations list this morning, and he mostly was. Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay, except the bearded auteur was absent in the one place where it mattered the most to him. Snubbed by his directorial peers, he will at least get a break from wondering if he will win for one major category. And Cooper can cry in his champagne with Peter Farrelly, who looked primed to appear here after a Directors Guild nomination and the general love for Green Book on the awards circuit. Whether you love or hate the movie, it was assumed that the former There's Something About Mary filmmaker would be included at the expense of some other worthy director. For better or worse, this wasn't the case. He will need to find another true story to turn into a crowd pleaser if he wants a personal Oscar nod. And I know that I talked about this yesterday, about the controversy surrounding Green Book, and that there are two camps, people who hate it and people who love it. I loved it. And it's mostly because of the two performances, the two main performances. Ali and Morgan Mortensen are unbelievable in it. Another one, Best Actor, Ethan Hawke for First Reformed. How many Critics Awards does an actor have to win to get an Oscar nomination? Apparently almost all of them isn't the answer. Hawke nearly ran the table with critics groups around the country. All signs, divine and otherwise, pointed to him being the closest thing to a lock here. And while the actor has been feted by Oscar before, nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Boyhood and for Training Day, Best Screenplay nods for co-writing before the Before movies, his exclusion from the party for what's arguably the single best performance of his career is really hard to understand. Pass the Pepto and whiskey. yeah, it's a shame he didn't get nominated. He's been good in a lot of movies, and he was. By the way, everybody talks about how great Denzel is in Training Day, and he is. Like, Denzel is amazing in that movie. Ethan Hawke is terrific in that movie, you know, and also does not get swallowed up by Denzel's performance because it's such a showy, you know, performance. It's such a flashy and such a great villain. But he's right there, man. He's toe to toe with him through. You've seen Training Day, right?
Yeah,
he's great in it, but he's terrific in Training Day, and he's great in First Reformed. So that was a snub. How about this? Best Actress, Toni Collette for Hereditary. Now, this is the one that I think is ridiculous, but I didn't think she was going to get nominated. I didn't think, you know, that she was going to get a horror movie. It was a weird movie. It wasn't getting any kind of awards buzz of any kind. But her performance, it's my favorite performance of last year, was Toni Collette in Hereditary. She was insanely good. Speaking of critical darlings, this one may hurt even more than Hawk. Sure, by the time the nominations were approaching, even fans of this movie had stopped making sacrifices to Paymon. Come on, man! But knowing that a longstanding bias from serious awards-giving bodies against the horror genre doesn't make the Academy ignoring Collette's searing, fearless work in this terrifying story of a family falling apart any easier. No offense to the five nominated performers, but no actress in 2018 brought down the house like she did in Hereditary. Sing it! It sucks that history will be the only thing to recognize that. Yeah, I agree with every word. Every word of that. Best Supporting Actor, here are a couple of surprise snubs. Michael B. Jordan for Black Panther and Timothy Chalamet for Beautiful Boy. After the likely frontrunners, Mahershala Ali and Richard E. Grant, the general consensus was that the Best Supporting Actor was a horse race between a number of competitors. And some deserving candidates couldn't cross the finish line. When Beautiful Boy premiered at the Toronto Film Festival this past fall, the assumption was that Chalamet would ride his current success to his second nomination in a row, but no. And Black Panther may be the first MCU movie nominated for Best Picture. Oh, yeah, that's another first. It's the first comic book movie to be nominated for Best Picture. Not just Marvel, but any comic book movie. It was funny, Trevor Noah was talking about the Oscar nominations last night on The Daily Show, and he said, he's like, man, you know, it's all about cultural diversity this year. You know, he's talking about Roma, and he was talking about, you know, how many African-Americans have been nominated this year, and Spike Lee finally gets his first nomination. He said, because you know the Academy is like, okay, we don't want Oscars So White happening anymore. It can't happen anymore. So, and he said, he goes, because there are two movies that are nominated for Best Picture that have the word black in their titles. He said, you know, they were going, okay, we got to nominate Black Panther. We got to nominate Black, got to nominate Black Klansman. Also, you know what? Nominate Black Mirror. And they're like, that's a TV show. It doesn't matter. Just get it in there. Get the word black in the title. Get it in there. And then Ronnie Chang, who was a really funny correspondent on The Daily Show, really, really funny. He was in Crazy Rich Asians. And he's got a small role in it. He's good in it, and you know, but he plays a real jerk in it. Well, he plays his role on The Daily Show is to be angry Asian guy. That's like what he does. He rants and raves. You know, he's like, if Louis Black were Asian, that's what this guy does. So his rant last night was about how he got snubbed for Best Supporting Actor and started ripping on all the guys who got nominated. And he goes, by the way, when he got to Sam Rockwell, he's like, by the way, what are you going to do? He won it last year. What are you just going to get? Is he going to get nominated? He's going to go, why don't you just call it the Sam Rockwell Award? And he goes, and by the way, there were too many Sams in this category. There's already one Sam that's been nominated. Hashtag Oscar so Sam. He's So, Black Panther, for Best Picture, but the Academy wasn't quite ready to truly crown the movie. It was left out of several deserving categories, but Jordan snub in the Best Supporting Actor nominations is a cut that admittedly draws blood. And then Best Picture, if Beale Street Could Talk. That was a surprise. That was a surprise. I mean, you know, this guy's last movie won Best Picture, even though we thought it was La La Land. That was, you know, one of the most insane moments ever. You can argue the merits of questionable Best Picture nominees like Bohemian Rhapsody, Green Book, and Vice. What? Bohemian Rhapsody and Vice, that's all I'm saying. It's hard, however, to look at the absence of Barry Jenkins' transcendent adaptation of James Baldwin's novel and not feel like the film had been robbed. It never found traction with voters like Moonlight did a few years ago, though the writing section of the Academy cited the work for adapted screenplay. Still, we'll never understand how one of the best films of 2018 missed out here. How about this? First Man. No nomination for Claire Foy for Best Supporting Actress. I was really surprised by that, and I love her. And then Justin Hurwitz for Best Score. Both shocks. After a surprisingly strong showing at the BAFTA Awards, it looked like Damien Chazelle's drama about Neil Armstrong's trip to the moon might be surging enough to make a bigger dent at the Oscars than we thought. Instead, it missed several places, including a relatively thin category of Best Supporting Actress for Foy and Justin Hurwitz's Golden Globe-winning score. For months, it felt like these were two places that First Man could possibly win. Their Oscar campaigns were grounded before they even got to the launch pad. So, and that's a real shame. The whole fate of that movie is a real shame. The way Universal handled it, the way that, you know, it wasn't advertised well. They didn't do a good marketing campaign for it. And nobody saw it, and it was a great movie. First Man, I was on my top 10 list this year. And Claire Foy's terrific in it. And for that matter, everybody's good. Even Ryan Gosling's good in it, and the score is beautiful. It deserved much more acclaim and Oscar attention than it got. So, all right, we got a few more snubs to jump in here and talk about. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you have any thoughts on the Academy Awards and who you're rooting for and all that stuff. All right. So the Oscar nominations, we've been talking about them. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. If you have thoughts, who you're rooting for. We're talking about the surprises and the snubs. So for Best Documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor? This one's a true head-scratcher. A lot of people consider Morgan Neville's documentary about the host of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood the single viable candidate to win. It's sweet. It makes you cry. It reminds you of better days. It's a lock, right? And while it's hard to complain about a category that nominated such outstanding non-fiction work as Hale County This Morning, This Evening of Fathers and Sons and Minding the Gap, this is still a shocker, even if it means a smaller, largely unseen films are now getting a major push, something even Fred would probably agree is a good thing. Black Panther for Best Adapted Screenplay and Best Director. Ryan Coogler's Black Panther landed a nod for Best Picture among its seven nominations on the morning, but it was still hard to shake the feeling that the movie was only partially invited to the party. Apparently no one directed or wrote it, the biggest movie of 2018. It missed out on both of those categories. Yes, it's a big deal that a costumed hero one is nominated in the particularly typically snooty Best Picture category. But imagine the message that Academy could have sent by recognizing the script and the director. Wakanda Forever. Burning, Best Foreign Language Film and Best Supporting Actor. The Academy proved that they think outside of the box a bit when it comes to foreign language movies, nominating two for Best Director this year, Cold War and Roma. But this is often a category with a few wild misses, and ignoring Lee Chang-dong's masterful Burning singes more than most. It would have been the first Korean movie ever to be nominated in this section. Wow, really? Wow, I didn't know that. Was it too odd for them? Too disturbing? Too enigmatic? We'll never know. Ditto the omission of Steven Yeun in the Best Supporting Actor category as well. Best Director. A single woman. Believe it or not, it wasn't just men directing the best films of 2018. Sure, the Academy nominated Mariel Heller's Can You Ever Forgive Me for a pair of acting awards, and Josie Rourke's Mary, Queen of Scots for costume design, but the Oscars' long history of ignoring female directors in this category continued, with five dudes nominated for one of the most prestigious awards of the night. What about Lim Ramsey's work for You Were Never Really There, or how about Deborah Granick for Leave No Trace? You loved McCarthy and Grant, but what about the woman who directed them? Someday the gender balance in this category will feel like it's been corrected. This isn't the day. And then Crazy Rich Asians for Anything. One of the most enjoyable film stories of 2018 was the deafening buzz that turned Crazy Rich Asians into a worldwide phenomenon, and awards-giving bodies had been recognizing it for the last few months with PGA and Golden Globe nominations for Best Picture. The question was, where would the Academy shower their exclusive wealth on this smash movie? Best Supporting Actress for Michelle Yeoh? Best Screenplay? Best Production Design? The answer is none of the above. It got zero nominations. Zilch. Bupkis. It also makes you wish that there was still a category for Best Popular Film, just so the Asians could have landed somewhere on the category. So those were some of the surprises and the snubs. So let's see. Tom in Wisconsin said Vice should get an Oscar for makeup for Chaney, but that movie was a zero, a big disappointment. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought I was really looking forward to Vice because, Adam McKay was one of my favorite Saturday Night Live writers of all time, and he's made so many funny movies with Will Ferrell. And I really liked The Big Short. I thought The Big Short was a really terrific movie, but I hated Vice. I hated it. He was treating his audience like we were idiots during the movie. And all of the crazy stylistic stuff he tried, none of it worked. Christian Bale, fine. Sam Rockwell's the best thing in the movie, but it's not a good movie at all. Pat says, I'm thinking Green Book will win Best Picture, Spike Lee for Best Director, and Glenn Close for Actress. Interesting. 815 area code says, I am very excited and happy that Minding the Gap made the cut. It's an awesome documentary, but I might be biased since I live in Rockford and I used to live the skateboard life. So there you go. Well, those are the thoughts. That's what's happening. The Oscars will be handed out on February 24th without a host. They are going hostless for the Oscars this year. So that should be interesting to see what goes on there. See what they do with that telecast. So it's all build up to there. By the way, the SAG Awards are this weekend. Watch the SAG Awards and maybe you can figure out who's the favorites in the acting categories. So, all right. Dan, what do we got going tomorrow?
We have George Castle. He co-wrote a book about the 69 Cubs with Fergie Jenkins.
Oh, awesome. Okay. We'll talk about the 69 Cubs. That'll be happening tomorrow on this show. The news is coming up after this.